You're listening to a repeat of the 96FM Opinion Line. Phone and text lines are now closed. The Opinion Line with PJ Coogan. 1850-715-996.
Loosen that strap there. That's grand. That's grand. Bit rushed getting into position this morning, lads. 1850-715-996. Text us 083-396-9696. The email opinion at 96fm.ie. Knocknaheedy, Farranree, Mayfield, Mahon, Toker are the locations tonight for the Bonna Night celebrations, the official ones. Started a few years ago. I can't remember what Lord Mayor actually started them. But tonight they're fully endorsed and fully supported by the new Lord Mayor, who we had in the studio here Monday morning. Lord Mayor Tony Fitzgerald, good morning.
Good morning, PJ. How are you today?
Great. Can you remember, Tony, who actually started these? Was it Darren Murphy, or was it around his time?
I can't recall exactly, but I remember that there was a concern in council a number of years back that, you know, to celebrate St. John's Eve, which is the official title of it, where we call it Bonfire Night, that there needed to be a kind of a planned, organised, action to address the illegal bonfires that was around the city. And, you know, it's a classic example of how Cork City Council, the Gardaí, the HSE and other agencies can come together to be positive and proactive about a problem and turn it into a positive.
Yeah.
And as you said there, that's why tonight we have a number of fantastic family fun days across the city, and it's a night to bring out the children, bring them over to the parks and enjoy the celebrations that are in place tonight, beginning at around 4 p.m. until late until 8 or 9 o'clock this evening.
I know they'll all be pretty much done by 9 o'clock. It's then, though, that the problem starts, because the other ones start up, the ones that aren't sanctioned.
Yes, PJ, and I've been in contact since early morning with City Council and the Gardaí, and the message this evening is to protect your green area, protect your community. Over the years, people have been very annoyed that there's been actions undertaken by a minority now, because they are decreasing, PJ. I've just been onto the City Council there this morning, as I said, and they are decreasing. I know in a number of areas, City Council have picked up a small piece of rubbish in a number of areas, yeah. But it's on the decrease. But there's a message here, if communities want to protect their green areas, which I know they do, because it's only now, a year later, the grass is returning and it's returning to its original image. If there are people who are engaging in arriving in your estate or your area, take the number of the car or the van or whatever and ring the Gardaí, because the Gardaí will be out tonight patrolling the area and looking at and supporting communities and residents in order to protect their estate. So there's a message this evening. You know, after you return from the festival tonight or the family fun days, if you see something unusual and you want to protect your green area, inform the Gardaí and tell people that it's totally inappropriate to do this.
You see, you have a problem here, Lord Mayor, because since time immemorial, since I was a boy, since you were a boy, there have been bonnas on Bonna Night. And it was always a kind of a Cork thing. People went along, they burned their stuff, and the fire went out. And sometimes the fire brigade had to be called, fair enough, but the fire went out, and we all got on about our business.
Yeah.
And people still believe that they should have the right to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you, PJ, but they were more traditional family celebrations or community celebrations, you know, and they were organised, and they were... I remember going around with a tin can and knocking at people's doors.
That's right.
And we bought, I'm showing my age here now, PJ, we bought caramels and cheesecakes, and we'd have a bit of fun. But when our parents said, you know, 10 o'clock, it's time to come in, we came in, and, you know, that was the end of that. But there were fun nights. But, like, unfortunately... going back to what you said there, there has been in recent years an increase of I suppose what you call antisocial behaviour.
Yeah.
But in fairness, they are on the decrease. They are certainly on the decrease. PJ. And, you know, again, as I said, talking to the Gardaí this morning and the City Council in the Recreation and Parks Department, they are absolutely delighted with the response so far. Mm-hmm. They've picked up very few collections. There's been an inspection this morning in a number of estates around the areas, and they're saying to me, look, the green areas are protected, but the main focus will be tonight and later on this evening. So it's a call to the community, to the people of Cork, that if you see something, please come out. You know, take the number of the cars, let these people know this is unacceptable.
All right. Well, they all kick off, you say, around 4 o'clock. I'll give out the full list of where they are and the times. But effectively, it's Knocknaheeny, Farranry, Mayfield, Mahon and Toker, all starting between 4 and 5, and they'll all be done by about 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and could I just pay tribute in advance, PJ, to our staff in the Parks Department and the rapid coordinators and community wardens. You know, in conjunction with the Gardaí, they've put a lot of planning into this. But the real celebration will be by the volunteers and the communities that will come out tonight. These all started out in Leasdale in the Model Farm Road. I think that estate was the first to kickstart these festivals, where they, you know, brought out the children. And in fairness to Leasdale and the residents out there, you know, they gave it a great kickstart. So come out tonight and enjoy the celebrations.
All right, Lord Mayor, thank you very much. It was actually, thanks Tony, it was Terry Shannon who started the Civic Bonfire celebrations, they're saying, back in 2011. But according to the press release this morning that I have in front of me, this is the 10th anniversary, so they'll be going back to about 2007. So let's find out who was Lord Mayor then. But I do remember, and I know he's been in the news this week for all the other reasons, but I do remember at the time talking to Darragh Murphy when he was the Lord Mayor of Cork, and he was determined to outlaw, as best he could, the illegal bonners around the place. I do remember that. What Lord Mayor actually started these in 2007, 2008? Maybe Chris O'Leary can tell me, former Lord Mayor. Morning, Chris.
Good morning, PJ. How are you?
Good. Can you remember who started these?
I actually think, because I was working as a community worker at the time in the Farnry area and the Gornabrough area, and I think it was in the time of Joe Callaghan's Lord Mayorship.
Right. He'd have been the Labour man back then.
Yeah. It initially started in and around the same time as Rapid came on stream. Right. And that was back a fair bit of time now, yeah.
Do you think they have worked, Chris? Because I remember going to them over the years, just bringing my own family and just going to observe them. And yeah, they're great events, but the kind of people who sit around drinking cans and chucking three-piece sweets on a bonfire are not going to go to these things, and they're still out there.
Yeah, I think over the years, it has drawn people away from the illegal ones. We have fewer and fewer. The stats and the fire service will tell us quite clearly at this stage. We actually have fewer and fewer fires, illegal fires. And I suppose I agree with Diarmaid Vera there, who spoke to Tony Fitzgerald there a few minutes ago. I would prefer to see a day where we don't even tolerate one fire. You know, and I think that's the way we have to, because look, I've said it time and time again, I suppose I'm an advocate of traditions like this are not worth keeping. I don't believe they are.
Isn't it part of what we are as Cork people to celebrate this night?
If you let me speak a second now, and I'll just explain why.
Okay.
Because I think it's important to put it into context, PJ. Like, tradition long ago was, you get into the car and you drive home after a couple of drinks, and sure, that was fine. Okay? We now have said that's not tolerable anymore. That's illegal, right? Could you just imagine for 1 minute, we declare, and because of tradition, it's a great old tradition of the Irish drinkers getting into the car, so let's do it one night in the year. What would be the response? PJ?
I don't think people would agree with you, as in agree with doing it. No, they wouldn't.
No, they wouldn't. And the issue here is it's about safety. It's about the quality of life. I mean,
are you suggesting that even the civic version?
No, I don't think there should be fires. I mean, quite clearly, because I think that what it does at one level is that, remember, we have young, impressionable people who see controlled bonfires as, sure, look, it's okay, sure, it's safe. Look, you can do it this way and it's safe. I think we're still sending out the wrong messages.
So that even you think that even these particular celebrations that will be on tonight in five different locations should have no fire at them either.
Yeah, because not all of them do. Let's be clear about it. Not all,
no.
You know, in these days they don't in Farnry, in Cush, in Poppinsfield they don't, and they haven't since.
There's one down in Ballinure, isn't there?
Yeah, no, there's not. Anything that's not happening outside of Loch Mahon Park tonight is an illegal event.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And PJ, I have a very low tolerance. It's like an orgy to take out all your rubbish and just burn it on the green for tradition. I don't get it, you know. And look, most people are sensible about this. In most nights of the week or days of the week, you can't start lighting fires in your back garden or in your greens. So why should we abandon the bylaws and the laws and say, "Asher, look, it's tradition. We'll do it one night."
Yeah. But effectively, in that case, the civic celebrations should be bonfire-free, you're suggesting. Yes. Are they all fire-free?
No, they're not. But we're getting there. I think we'll see the end of them shortly, and I think that's a good step.
But you see, the thing about it then is, the only thing about that is, right, you see, the civic celebrations were started up to stop the illegal bonfires. And as Tony said, they have to a point. And you'd like to get them all the way.
Yeah.
If you eliminate the fire completely from all these civic celebrations, then it ain't Bonna Night anymore.
But then I think you come back. You hit the nail on the head, because I don't think we should be calling it Bonna Night in the first place. Okay, it's a family fun night. That's what it is. Family fun night. And if you look at the
it's a family fun night. That's a reinvention of the term. It's Bonna Night. It's bonfire night. It's as cork as Drisheen.
Well, can I say, PJ, again, in my time in working in and around these controlled festivals, in many respects, in the places I've walked in the past and that I've been heavily involved, we've taken away the word bonfire night. Because if we're not having a fire, then why are we calling it bonfire night?
Well, the press release comes under the title, subject title of the press release, 10-year anniversary of Cork City Council's Bonfire Night Celebrations.
I hear that, but I don't agree with it. I've already voiced my objections of using terminology like that, because I actually believe that all you're doing is perpetuating illegal fires. And look, I've already had calls over the last couple of days and, you know, the last few weeks about people who are worried about tonight. I get calls from people who are asthmatic, especially with the fine weather that we've had in many respects.
Yes.
We see things going up like a matchstick in many respects.
Yeah, well, that is a problem, yeah.
It'll be a huge issue, right? And not alone that, we'll see things that people light fires in the wrong places, near homes, you know, and it creates a huge antisocial behaviour, and I do not subscribe to this. Oh, this is fun. It's we're only having a few drinks. We're only sitting out, and it's fun. It's not when it impinges on other people. It's not.
So, do you think that eventually the civic celebrations should be done away with as well?
No, I don't. I think that a family. Fun-free night is what we need to do. We need to have more of them.
But what is the occasion? I get where you're coming from. You'd like to have these civic celebrations held and have no fire at them. Okay, fine. Yeah. But then again, how is bonfire night without a bonfire?
Yeah, well, the occasion, as you just mentioned there, is around a religious celebration. Okay, that's the occasion. And it moved from being a religious to, you know, to other things. But I have no difficulty in, it is what it is, the 23rd, it is a religious occasion. It has always been that. And in the past, in medieval times, you know, they lit bonfires. As I said to someone the other day, and I had a heated debate with somebody the other day, you know, this is tradition. You're taking away our tradition. It was tradition to burn witches. Do we still do it?
Hang on, Chris. I'll take a quick break and I'll bring in Mick Murphy, who agrees with you. Just stay there for me. Thanks. 1850-715-996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM. The Big Drive Home with Wayne Hilton, Cork's 96 FM.
I'll bring you the very latest Cork news from around the world, trending celebrity news. If you're out and about, all your essential Cork travel news, then I could be giving you the best news as I make lots of €1,000 cash calls. Join me weekday afternoons from 4 as we go home together and play Cork's biggest hits with the best variety.
Wayne Hilton, weekdays 4 p.m.
With the new Peugeot 3008 SUV, European Car of the Year 2017. Never has an SUV gone so far.
Cork's 96 FM. Text the opinion line now.
This is what you came for.
083-396-96-96. Cork's 96 FM.
I know, Chris, you're in a hurry, so I just want to let you sum up for 1 minute. So you reckon that we should keep going now until we completely eliminate bonfires entirely?
Exactly. And we should continue then with a new tradition, which in many respects is about family-free, fun nights. There is community groups, PJ, through youth organisations, through sporting organisations, through music. Like, we've got fabulous community-based projects that have actually an opportunity now, and they use it to showcase the work and to show an alternative for young people in particular, and older people in many respects, to actually get more involved in their community. And I think that's the tradition I'd love to see the Phoenix rising from this ashes, to be honest about it.
Do you see if there's no ashes?
Yeah, well, you see, the ashes are there. It's now up to us to get the Phoenix rising.
All right,
but PJ, just to say, and I'd like to say publicly that at the joint policing, which I'm the chair of on last Monday, this issue came up. Josephine Feeney was down from the policing authority. We had the city council, the whole lot. And I reaffirmed exactly what I've said in this interview with you, that I really think the time has come that, officially, we should not be subscribing to community events that actually now have bonfires.
Right.
Okay? And I do think, it is really about the safety. It's about the quality of life for everybody else. But it's a huge opportunity for us to showcase all the good work. I know that I'll be attending something later on this evening that will be giving awards and medals to young people who've actually done huge, tremendous work, over the year. And it's a great time for celebration. And they're the things I'd like to see us celebrate.
All right, Chris, thanks for that. 1850-715-996. Mick Murphy thinks that Chris was talking an awful lot of sense. Mick, how are you?
Good morning, PJ. Yeah, I agree fully with everything that Chris O'Leary said. He mentioned one thing there that was tradition before about the drinking and driving, that we wouldn't tolerate it now. I probably around the same age as you, PJ, and I remember Sunday evenings was the tradition was, or Sunday morning, just being from Cork to Yall for the sunny day. And I could name every pub between Cork and Yall that we stopped off and for a drink on the way down and again on the way back.
Yeah.
And that was acceptable. We met everyone that we met on the beach in Yall. We met in every pub on the way up and down nearly. So, it was an acceptable thing. So it was stroke hauling salmon out of the River Lee. Like, that's not acceptable anymore. And I think Chris is 100% right. I think that the bonfire night thing has to be put to bed.
God almighty, Mick. Are we going to do away? I mean, we'll be wishing each other happy holidays soon. I mean, we doing away with everything? Like, Jesus, where's our identity gone? I agree with you about the trip to Yall, by the way. That was ridiculous.
Yeah,
but the last vestiges of being Cork is an old bonner.
It is, but PJ, everything has to be controlled. And,
do away with Little Women's Christmas next.
No. We went away from uncontrolled bonfires down to somewhat controlled situations now that we have.
But and isn't that grand?
It's not really, because you still have the damage to the environment and, to the local areas that have to be paid for to clean up again afterwards. And, we have enough taxes coming out to be paying for this, that and the other thing. So it's going down that route. Peter, I think a far better idea for the night after this would be a city council-controlled fireworks display, because the many tours that we have in the city, in June especially, would be able to take part in that and understand what it's all about. Because, it's a good couple of years, PJ, it's about maybe 10 years ago, I had a friend of mine over from America, and on Bonfire Night, he was over doing a tour of the country on a motorcycle, and we were on Bonfire Night here, and he saw the smoke going around the cities, he saw the smoke rising, and he thought that was the troubles after coming down here.
I know, but how would you say, if you have this fireworks display, and I'm talking about now, I'm all for organised events, all right? Sanctioned, watched and safety conscious. I'm all for those. But I draw the line at eliminating the fires at them. And I'll tell you why. If you have a tourist coming down and saying, oh, it's a lovely fireworks display. Someone told me you used to do bonfires before. What are you going to say? Yeah, we were too prissy about the environment. We got rid of them.
Well, what I'd like to see as well, Peter, like this, people have traditions in other countries as well that I completely disagree with, like bullfighting in Spain and France. And in France, it's almost eliminated now, but it's still a stronghold there. I don't think that's a tradition that's worth keeping. And I
so
don't
you do away with traditions you don't agree with?
I would do away with traditions that I can't see doing any good. Not that I don't agree with. I can't see doing any good.
Okay. You know what? I was all for the idea of the organised events, as in there might be a properly built, properly supervised bonfire back in the day. But I don't think it'll ever fly, Mick, if you try to have civic events on Bonna night without a Bonna.
Yeah, probably not. But, we have to change mindsets. And maybe in 5 years' time it might become acceptable. But I'd like to see it anymore. But I know it's not going to happen in the next couple of years, but hopefully in the near future that it will end and that we'll just be doing other things that won't be damaging the areas that we live in. You look, when you're coming out the front door, you don't want to be seeing scarce dirt for the next 3 or 4 months, mud bats in September because there's no grass there to kind of get growing again. I think we need to change.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Mick. Cheers. 1850-715-996. I get to some of your texts around about this in a second. Just a reminder, there are some 96 and C103 transmitters in West Cork presently off air. We know not why, but our engineering crew are on their way. Now, if you're listening to me or trying to listen to me down there, that message was entirely wasted upon you. But you can always go online and listen to us via your phone app if you want to. 1850-715-996. Henry Kremen, they're telling me, was one of the organisers of the very first alternative event in Leasdale a number of years ago. Henry's on the line. Hi, Henry.
Morning, PJ. How are you doing?
Great. Was there a fire at that one?
PJ, unfortunately, it started off with one fire probably about 20 years ago. But after about 10 years, it ended up about 15 bonfires on various areas on our green,
Yes.
So, look, basically, we all got the federalism committee and we done a petition in the estate and we wanted people's opinions,
Yes.
So, basically, look, the point was 98% of the people in the estate wanted it stopped due to the condition of our green area for months after. And thank God, I think we're in our 15th year now. And our green is absolutely immaculate now every summer,
And will there be no fire?
No, none whatsoever. I tell you.
And do people still come?
Sorry?
Do people still come?
In relation, when you say come, do they come with rubbish or something, is it?
No, do they come and take part of the thing?
Oh, they do. Like next Sunday, they'll all have our sports day again for all the kids. Like, we did replace bonfire night with a sports day for the children. And we also have an open air mass on Saturday night, tomorrow night, for all the residents of the estate also. And it's a lovely occasion,
It is, but I'm thinking, Chris, Henry, and maybe I don't know if I'm a bit of an old dinosaur here. Maybe I am, I don't know. But, a bonfire night without a bonfire is like a Christmas party without Santa.
Yes, PJ, but the whole point is, I'd have to rethink about the organised ones, because the point is, they're controlled. I'm totally, totally against the illegal ones.
Let's be clear about that. I'm not talking about illegal bonfires. I'm talking about properly organised, civic, amenity-style bonfires in places that are safe and supervised. I'm all for those, but you have to have a fire on bonfire night.
Look, I would be thinking along the same lines as yourself in relation to controlled ones, definitely. And I tell you why. I was looking at the paper there on Saturday night on Monday night, and Tony Fitzgerald, the Arbera, was up in Knocknaheeny, and they had a tiny little bonfire for it, right? Also had the Donovan brothers heading back to Skibbereen there recently again with their World Cup or the medal for the rowing. And they had bonfires along the road for them. So there is a tradition there in relation to St. John's Eve particularly.
Yes.
Bonfires overall in relation to celebrating stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But as I say, PJ, look, our place is used as a dumping ground, and I see other parts of the city that still put up with this. And as was said earlier, hopefully over the next couple of years, and all those illegal ones, you know, will be gone forever, hopefully, you know?
All right. Okay, Henry, thanks for that. 1850-715-996. I don't know. I'm in two minds about this. I was all for the council organising events. I thought, you know what, set it up, bit of music, maybe a barbecue, organized, safe, supervised bonfire for the families and for the kids, so we can teach them the tradition and all of that. That was fine. But now they're doing away with the fire. A bonfire night without a bonfire is like, it's like Christmas without Santa. Of course, Mary says, PJ, Chris is correct. Bonfire night's a night of widespread antisocial behaviour. They should be banned. Get real. I'm talking about the organised ones, Mary. Why not use pyrotechnics instead? Says another text. Mary, I'm within about 30 seconds there. I don't like bonfires, says Eugene, but I totally disagree with outlawing even the official ones. If I adopt that logic of this, then we should ban rally cars because they're noisy. And we go fast. We should ban drinking entirely because drink causes problems. We should ban concerts because they intrude on residents for the time they're on. It's things like being able to go to a fun event that help make life worthwhile and something to look forward to. And that's from Eugene. Mary, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think? Doing away even with the organised bonfires?
No.
No?
No. Definitely not. Why give away our traditions?
Yeah.
It stops people from coming down illegally dumping fridges, freezers, bottles of gas, paint.
That's what the supervised ones were about, though.
They have stopped the one at the end of my road this year, and they provided us with a skip to get rid of any bulky stuff this week.
Right.
And as I said to the guys collecting it, I said, God, there's very little stuff there this year. I said, isn't there? Because it wasn't an open site where people were coming down with our trailers. No bother entering it.
And no, I remember it. There used to be a big one years ago down behind the 5-star in Torquay. They used to put a bonfire in there and there was people, you'd be afraid to leave anything out because it'd be burnt.
Yeah. I went to the dump myself this week twice because I took my wood and stuff out there in case they would get a hold of it and start lighting it. Now, that's only wood. Because I know the bonfire is not going ahead this year down there, which I totally agree with. But don't give up our traditions. We're giving so much of our traditions.
Mind you, Chris was making the point. Anymore. You know, it was also traditional to go out and get sloshed and drive home.
Yes, that's all changed. But there's no drinking and driving where bonfires are concerned. They're in the locality.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Mary. 1850-715-996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM. Sunday mornings, Cork's 96 FM brings you
The Arts House.
Interviews with actors and theatre directors, concert news and show reviews, live studio performances and festival roundups, exhibition info and the very latest film news.
The Arts House.
The Arts House. Sunday mornings, 8 till 10.
With Griffin's Potatoes Cork. Planted, picked and produced in Cork. The great taste of home. Get it,
Simon. Cork's 96 FM. The Opinion Line.
This is what you came for.
1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
Actually, let's do a fast poll, lads, if you don't mind. But just do it up to 10 o'clock, because I don't know who agrees with me here or not. I don't think that a bonfire night or a St. John's night or whatever it is complete without a fire. An organised, supervised, safe one. Absolutely. Absolutely. Organised, supervised and safe. Let's be sure. But you got to have bonfires. Do a quick poll for me. If you agree with me and think that bonfires should be allowed to continue in a supervised way, not willy-nilly, bonfire, yes. If you don't, and if you agree with Chris O'Leary and Mick Murphy and others, then bonfire, no. 083-396-9696. Mossy Donovan is in Zurich Airport, Bigar. Hello, Mossy, in Zurich Airport. There's people having trouble hearing me down in West Cork this morning. But you're listening to me in Zurich Airport. And he says, listening to the show brings back great memories of growing up in Greenmount and Bonfire Night in Desmond Square, organised by Mrs. Haynes. Was it Mrs. Haynes? One tough cookie she was. She took no messing and everybody enjoyed themselves. And he listens to the podcast every day. Thanks, Mossy. Good of you to call. And I know that Bonfire Night is big in Spain. So let's check up with our Spanish correspondent. Vivian, good morning.
Morning, Peter. How are you?
Good. Brad, it is, isn't it? It is very big, isn't it?
It's huge. It's massive. I'm just listening here to the arguments whether we should, you know, continue or not. It's massive in Spain. It's huge in parts of Catalonia, Valencia, and in the north of the country.
And how is it done? Is it organized?
It is organized, but it's massive. I mean, they have huge, huge, huge fires. If we lit a fire anywhere other than on the beach, because it's normally on the beaches, the whole place would go up in smoke. And considering what happened last week in Portugal, the tragedy. But they are very organized. And it's a massive family event. Everybody goes. And again, there's lots of drink involved and a lot of dancing and a lot of celebrating. Again, so it's not only a Cork tradition. It's a tradition probably in many parts of Europe, going back to ancient times. I completely agree with you, PJ. If we get rid of this, where do we stop? Next thing, we'll be wishing each other happy holidays because we'll be afraid to upset somebody by saying happy Christmas. Do you know? Ridiculous.
Like telling the Jews they can't have Hanukkah.
Precisely that, PJ. As I say, it's huge. It's massive here. And it was massive back home in Cork. And I think it's a tradition that we should keep because if we lose it, we lose our identity.
Hang on, let's bring in Stacey because I don't think she agrees with us, Viv. Hi, Stacey. Okay.
Hi, PJ. How are you?
Great, all together. What do you want to say?
No, I don't agree with it. I'm not from Cork.
Right.
So I'm sitting here in the kitchen with my young baby, and the thoughts that the air is going to be polluted now for days in beautiful Cork City is just really concerning. And it's really concerning that you are holding on to this idea in 2017 that it's okay to burn copious amounts of rubbish for everyone just to frolic around the bonfire for one night. It's absolutely insane that you would want air pollution to increase in beautiful Cork for one night. It's just ridiculous. I'm not saying, I think you should update your traditions. You don't have to do away with your traditions, but...
Well, would you say the same to Vivian, who's over in Spain, where they build huge organised ones there?
Well, we're not Spain. We have a duty.
You've been placed on hold.
What?
Please wait.
Who did that?
For our children.
You've been placed on hold. Please wait.
Hang on, I'm going to give you back Viv's line there, guys. I think that's Viv. Stacey, yeah? Oh, God. All right, let's fix this. 1850-715-996. The gods are not smiling on me today. Maybe they're trying to ban bonfires in the heavens. I'll sort it out in a second.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
The award-winning radio star is moving. Breakfast radio presenter KC.
96 FM are delighted to welcome KC.
Cork's 96 FM will have a brand new breakfast show.
The wait is almost over. Show featuring Ross Brown. Kicks off Monday, July 3rd at 6 a.m.
It's gonna be epic
on Cork's 96 FM. Text the Opinion Line now.
This is what you
came for. 083-396-9696. Cork's 96 FM.
Okay, I was trying to get back to Stacey and Vivian. Hopefully no one put me on hold this time. Someone isn't there. Brenda, just check for me, will you, who's there and who isn't. Couple of messages. Is there a bonfire in the estate where PJ lives, says Jim. Jim, no, not at the moment, because if there was, the green is too close to houses and too close to where people live. When I was growing up, we had a big, huge field up behind us, and there was always a bonfire at the top of the field. But not now. And it would be the wrong place to put one. And people should get it. If they don't get it, I don't know how many times I have to say it. Proper, organised, safe and supervised. Not wildfires around the place. Go to who? Where am I going? Sorry, missed that. Line two. Paul, good morning to you. Who's saying you agree with me, Paul, do you?
Yeah, I agree with you, PJ.
Go on, say some more for me.
Basically, I agree with it because, you know, my point of view of it is when I was growing up, we had supervised bonfires where there'd be adults there, the Garda Síochána would be there, and the fire brigade would be on call if anything got out of hand. In my experience through it, we never had any bad bonfires, so I don't see why we should get rid of it for people that are keeping it out of control. It can be all calm once it's supervised.
Yes. Yeah. This is the point I'm making, that once it's safe and supervised, where's the problem?
And even if people don't want the fire, as like in my own estate in Maryborough Woods, we organise bouncy castles, a DJ, barbecues, all this type of stuff. You know, I don't see, but bonfire night has been a huge tradition in Ireland for God knows how long, dating back to before I was born.
Well, it's actually it's a worldwide tradition because Vivian was on there, I think she's still there in Spain, where they do huge ones there all together. You know, so
yeah, like,
it's not just us, Paul.
Up by my own, there in Northern Ireland, my uncle, they have big, huge bonfires, but as I say, they're supervised, so I don't see what's wrong with a supervised bonfire. No, I don't agree with people just burning their rubbish and starting fires at the houses where, you know, there can be a fatality at the end of it. So I think once it's supervised with the Garda Síochána, the association of the estate, I think it can be run smoothly.
I mean, even to the point of having to get a permit to do it.
Yeah, even a permit, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Paul, thank you for that. 1850-715-996. Amazing, Vivian, the number of people who think that we should move on.
Yeah, no, I don't think so at all. It's like everything, once it's gone, the tradition is lost and gone forever. Yeah. And let's face it, over, you know, if you were to look back at what we used to celebrate, you know, in Irish society, and all those traditions are gone. Even St. Patrick's Day, if I'm not mistaken, you know, when we were kids, we used to get the day off. I think now, I don't know where it falls or how it falls, but I seem to think we're losing our identity.
Well, in fairness, you know? I know you're out of Ireland. While St. Patrick's Day is still a big day and it's still a national holiday, everyone has a day off. The parades and stuff have changed with the times a bit, but it's still pretty much celebrated. But bring Stacey back in there. Stacey, you're the one who was saying about, I'm accusing us of promoting pollution.
Yeah, you're saying as long as it's safe and supervised. There's nothing safe about burning wood or burning rubbish into the atmosphere or into the air in the city. It's not safe at all. It can cause cancer, it can cause asthma. And I just don't, and I'm really worried that people are upset about a tradition.
Do you have a fireplace at home, Stacey?
I do, yeah.
Do you light a fire in the winter?
Well, I tell you something, PJ, I don't burn wood that's treated with chemicals. That's the point. You don't burn, you see, you don't burn stuff that the people are burning in the bonfires will admit.
But this is really what we're saying about safe and supervised. You only put certain things on it in a safe and I'm completely with you, Stacey, because I can remember when I was a young fella, the biggest problem was fellas used to throw tins of paint on it and aerosol cans to see how far they'd fly into the air. I'm not about that. You remember that too, Viv, don't you?
I do, absolutely. I'm listening, yeah, absolutely. I think it's there's two or three debates going on here. One thing is but the point is that it's the type of thing that you're burning. What kind of a bonfire is it? Is it organised? If it's organised, you won't have fellas throwing paint and aerosol cans and God knows whatever crap they can find, sofas, things like that, that give up toxic fumes. You want something organised. You know, and by that I mean you also have to know what they're burning, because of course if you don't, then everybody is inhaling all the crap and all the poisons.
There's the point we're making, Stacey. Safe and supervised, isn't that?
Absolutely. Yeah, but absolutely.
But do you
why not?
It's a dated tradition. Burning a bonfire is such a dated tradition. and look at the St. Patrick's Day Festival. It's a day of parades. It's a day of fun for the whole family. Why can't you update your little tradition to that? Like, why does it have to be about burning woods?
But your Patrick's Day hasn't changed that much at all. Patrick's Day hasn't changed that much at all, Stacey. It's just been broadened, that's all.
PJ, I know you do not want to part with your precious little bonfire in your fire, but it's dangerous for the environment. That's my final point on this. And it's sad. I mean, I don't know if any other county in Ireland has this tradition, but I'm shocked.
Well, you're talking about it's global. In fact, I'm going to bring in when you guys are gone, I'm going to bring in Sean, who'll give us an outline of the history of it. But it seems to be a global, I mean, certainly it's all over Spain. And I know that as well, correct me if I'm wrong here, Viv, it's not just one night, because every part of Spain has its fiesta.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, gosh. It always makes me laugh about the fiestas. I mean, this is getting away from St. John's night, but each little village will have a week of celebrating. And you'll say, who are we celebrating? Some obscure saint. You say, never heard of him. And they kind of smile and nod and go, neither have we. But it's like an excuse to celebrate, you know, to party. And long may the traditions live. Why not? Why not? It makes them Spanish, and our traditions make us Irish. Yeah. I think we should just be very aware of and you know, keep a hold of those.
All right. Listen, Vivian and Stacey, thank you very much, guys. 1850-715-996. Let's do that. Bonfire yes, bonfire no, if you agree with the tradition. Bonfire yes, if you... And listen, Tom is tearing into me here on the text. Safe, organised, supervised bonfires. Okay? Bonfire yes, bonfire no. 1850-715-996. Where am I going? Oh, yeah, Sean is there. Sean the Shanachie. Right, Sean, off with you, boy.
Hiya, PJ. How's it going?
Good. The history of Bonfire Night, St. John's Eve. Why did we suddenly start to burn stuff?
It's a Celtic festival. That's why it's in Spain as well. And it's basically to celebrate the growing of the crops. And they would set this big bonfire around, in the community would set the bonfire, and they would take parts of the bonfire, like a sod or a piece of wood, and walk through their crops, blessing it, basically. That was what it is. And I think there's a scientific thing there about parasites and getting rid of them. And they would also throw the ashes into the crops. Now, and of course, that's moved on then to St. John's Night, John the Baptist's birthday. And so they kept the bonfire going. And for some reason, it's just really caught on in urban areas, in Cork City. But it's also all over the place. My mother came down from Cork City, and she would always have bonfire nights here. You know, and it's just that idea. It's a primal, it's an element. We all have it. That poor little Stacey there was saying about our poor little tradition. I mean, do we give up barbecues? Do we give up driving cars? We can't keep the air constantly clean. But if we just burn wood and, as you say, organised events, it's a wonderful way of bringing the community together. And that Chris O'Leary, is he a councillor or something? Or
former Lord Mayor.
Former Lord Mayor. I would really work on other cultures in politics rather than going after the culture of a bonfire. I would get rid of other cultures in politics.
Like,
you know what I mean? Like cronyism, going on junkets, all these kind of things, appointments and all those kind of things. There's a lot more to be done in politics than getting rid of bonfires. It's a way of bringing the community together. It's a primal instinct. We all have it. I mean, if you're a meat eater, there's nothing like eating a chop. Do you know? And that goes right back to the caveman. That goes right back. It's also honouring our ancients, the people that went before us, the people who survived in Ireland, and we survived because of it. And getting rid of, chipping away at all these traditions, and also chipping away at those traditions will leave us kind of blank and boring, which you can, some people sound already. But if you don't have organized bonfires, like you're saying, PJ, what's going to happen? You will drive it underground again.
And all the illegal ones will flare back up. Sean, thank you. I've been waiting for someone to make that point for half an hour.
It's stupidity, PJ. You know, to
say... I've been waiting for someone to make that point for half an hour, Sean.
Yeah. It's like, why would you... It's going well now. Why would you try and change it? To make it go worse again. We have it in our hands now. We've beautiful. I was performed as an event in Mahon many years ago, and it was a great event, a community event. And of course, people will be a little bit obstreperous. People will be a little bit
wild. But that's what we do. That's what we are. We're people. We're not kind of little robots that all sit down and, like, you put on a little video on a screen saying, oh, look at the fire there. Oh, that's nice. We want an element. We want that wildness in us. That's what makes us Irish.
Sean, I leave you go with that. Great point, and thank you for making it.
You're listening to a repeat of the 96FM Opinion Line. Phone and text lines are now closed. The Opinion Line with PJ Coogan. PJ Coogan. 1850-715-996.
James, you're on the radio next. Hold on for me, mate. 1850-715-996. Text 083-396-9696. Email opinion at 96fm.ie. With all the palaver about bonfires, I forgot to pick up old Darren from the Street Fleet. They're out today with the Times Ireland edition. Good morning, Dar.
Hi, PJ. That's right. Myself and Tuala from the Street Fleet are here on the Lower Glanmire Road, just before the railway station, and we're giving out copies of the Ireland edition of the Times. So if you'd like a copy of the paper and you're in the area, why not pop down to us? With the Ireland edition of the Times, be well informed on Ireland and the world. I'm Darren Johnston with the Street Fleet on Cork's 96FM.
And as thanks. And the front page of the Times actually today has the most gorgeous photograph of the Sumatran tiger cub born down at Fota Wildlife Park. And they're looking for a name for the Sumatran tiger cub. For some reason, it's got to start with the letter D. I would call it Doty Pet, but that's just me. 1850-715-996. Now, James, you were wanted to get say something about the bonfire discussion. How are you?
I'm not too bad, PJ. How are you keeping?
Grand altogether. Do you agree with Sean and you agree with me?
Oh, 100%. I can remember growing up, the bonfire was the highlight of the summer. No, don't get me wrong, the illegal bonfires can be a disaster, right? And I know what you're saying is that the controlled bonfires. But I remember growing up in a housing estate and we used to have a controlled bonfire where the parents took control of it. Every parent came out, everyone got involved in it. The guard used to come around to make sure everything was okay. The fire brigade used to come around and everything was okay. I don't think they've ever outed one for us. And it was fantastic. The next morning, the parents would come back out and we used to sweep up all the crap that was left over. And that was it.
Yeah.
These do-gooders, as I would call them, coming on the air, talking about air pollution. I don't know how I'm still alive if it's that bad, because back then they burnt black tires, they burnt everything.
Mm. And we're not talking about that being done. It shouldn't be done.
And that's what, these controlled fires, if you even went to, like last year down Clashel Road, or the year before, like you can see even the smoke that's coming off them. It's practically clear white smoke. It's not this bad pollution you're talking about. But it is a part of history within Cork, and you hear people about we should get rid of it. And I agree, if you are living in an area where there's 35 young fellas behind you and they're cutting trees and they're trying to put tires on, that's, I disagree completely with that.
Yes.
But a controlled bonfire, the kids love it. It's just this standing around it. I remember growing, when we were young, we used to actually run in home and we used to grab potatoes, right, and wrap them up in tinfoil and throw them into the edge of the bonnet and have a baked potato. That's the way we used to do it. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And it was the highlights. And we used to talk about it for the summer. It was brilliant. So you loved it.
Yeah.
I disagree 100% with people saying we should. It's a part of our culture. It's part of our history. I don't think the whole ozone is going to burn down because people are having a bonnet. As you said, Spain are doing it. But you get so many people coming on these days and everybody wants to be so PC correct. They all want to have this bonfire. Ban everything. Do everybody forget where they came from? Right? It's a part of Cork's tradition. We need to keep our traditions. Yeah. If we get rid of our traditions, we're losing a part of Cork.
And Chris O'Leary was saying, the former Lord Mayor was suggesting that we could have the events like we have tonight in Knocknaheeny, Farranree, Mayfield, Mahon and Toker, and those five organised, you know, properly organised. But we should have them without fires. Now, I was suggesting that to do that, and some of them won't have fires, but that's like having Christmas without Santa.
Like, that's just what you call that party in the park. That's things that a lot of communities do all over the world every single week. Do you know what I mean? That's different. This is bonfire night. This is why, as you call it, this is bonnet night. The real Corkonians will say it. Bonnet night is a staple. We know exactly what bonnet night is about, right? How many people tonight will get into their cars and drive around the whole city and look at the different bonnets with kids? And yeah, it's fantastic just to get a part.
Now, the chances are, James, what you're looking at will be illegal ones.
Yes, exactly.
The ones that send black smoke 90 foot into the air are probably the legal ones.
No, but I'm saying, if we went down to the park tonight and bonfire night, and next thing, there's all fun and games, and then we're at the fire, there's no fire. I thought it was bonfire night. Oh, yeah, but it's not. Well, this is not bonfire night. If you have tourists coming, this is what they should be. It's bonfire night. It's a part of... I think it's crazy having a party with, as you said, it's like having Christmas without Santa or Christmas without a Christmas tree. It's pointless.
All right.
We can have a party in the park any day of the week for multiple reasons, but this is bonfire night. The name of it says it all.
All right. Okay, James, thanks for that. 1850-715-996. Here's a text for someone who, I'm sorry, no, you're really not kind of listening. My God, would PJ please remain on the point? No one objects to organised bonfires. People are fed up with the illegal ones. Here in Mahon Drive, year after year, we put up with people just dumping their household rubbish on the green. Everything from rubbish to sinks, cookers and fridges. Last year, there were 7 different fires on the green at one time. I took video of people arriving in vans and cars, dumping all kinds of rubbish and driving away. I have video of kids 4 or 5 years old starting their own fire, totally unsupervised, last night. Whoever you are, texter, I completely agree with you. What you're describing, I want banned completely. An enforced ban on that. But the people like Chris O'Leary, your local your local councillor down there, and Mick Murphy, and a few more, like, what was her name, that lady? Oh, God, I can't remember her name now before 10. But she said, Stacey, she said, ban them all, even the organised ones. Why are we celebrating the burning of the environment, the damaging of the environment? So I'm opposed to the people, texter, who want to ban even the organised bonfires. That's where I'm going with this. 1850-715-996. Helen, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, PJ. How are you?
Good. Which side are you?
I'm for bonfires. I think we're doing away with our traditions.
Organised ones now, I imagine.
Organised ones, yes. Because, I mean, and she's talking about the environment, but it was always the fires were collected and they were left dry and that's what was burnt. And maybe timber that wasn't treated, as that woman was on about. Those, I mean, it wasn't treated. Are you with me?
I am, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, there is rubbish being burnt and it is terrible, and but if they're organised... And I don't know whether you got my text or not, but we used to have them here in Cove before. And there used to be one in Moore's Place, and there used to be one in Glenanar, which had music and dancing. As a child, my mother and father brought me to them, and they were great nights.
Yeah.
So why can't we have that again? But you see, I don't know, the children have too much now? I don't know. Mm. Or parents are not bringing them to them.
Yeah. Well, the organised ones, there's 13,000 people attended the organised ones last year.
But that's in city. Here in Cove, we don't have any anymore.
Do you not?
No. Mm. No. Because they were banned. And the one in Moore's Place was a grass... Okay, I know people. But it was all the people, it was all the neighbours got together. They brought their children, they collected. And, you know, they were great nights.
Yeah.
And, of course, the council, we had the... They used to reseed the grass then, but we don't have a council in Cove anymore.
Yeah, I know. There's a county council, though.
County, yeah.
Have you ever asked the county council to have an organised event like they have in the city?
I suppose we haven't, really. I suppose it just takes somebody to go and do it, doesn't it?
I know.
I
remember the event you're talking about, Helen, though. Thanks a lot. 1850-715-996. Catherine, you're up next, but I want to read this. It's been sitting here on the screen for a while. This is from Douglas. Anne called to say she was walking last night through the park in Douglas. So there was a fight broke out at the entrance across from Tesco. 2 young boys ran past her, and then she and her husband saw them kicking 2 French students in the head. They then intervened. Couple did. Students were in an awful way. They phoned the guards and they came about 20-25 minutes later. Why won't the guards police the area? There's always trouble down there. You're right, Anne. There is always trouble down there. I saw a fight there myself. Well, it wasn't much of a fight, more a scuffle a week or two ago, just as I was going in to get a few bits and pieces in Tesco's. I saw a fight breaking out at the gates of the park. But I'll tell you why it's not policed properly. It's because the guards are in Toker. Because we have a beautiful Garda station down in Douglas and no bloody guards in it. That's why there's no police down there. That's why it's not properly policed. We have a village the size of Douglas. You're going to get me on one of my ranters now. We have a village the size of Douglas and a big, empty husk of a Garda station. And it's an absolute disgrace. 1850-715-996. And before anyone tells me, oh, it is staffed for a certain, it should be open around the clock. in a place the size of Douglas. 1850 715996. Back to bonfires. Catherine, hello.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
Not too bad. First of all, I'd like to say, well said, Sean. Instead of public officials coming on, had to mean a tradition that's gone on in Cork for decades, they should really look at their own expense sheets and look at what they're, why didn't they bring up about empty garage stations or anything that's actually affecting people. Sorry now, like, but I had to get it out of my system.
Of course.
I found it very hypocritical. But anyway, I'll tell you what now. I was, we are above Mayfield, and tonight we are having a couple of friends over for dinner, and we're going to look around. One of them, he's a sociological photographer, and we're going to be walking around different places to see the banners. I personally, look, to be honest about it, I'm a blow into Cork, but I think in a controlled atmosphere, a banner would be, is a good thing, because it brings people together. Neighbours talk to each other and things. Now, the lady about the cruise ship, with all due respect, if she's living in a city and that she has seen the smog down the city or see what's going on in the city regarding the buildings and conditions of them, they, to be honest about it, PJ, realistically, I mean, you're getting polluted every day when you want to shoot the city with smog, etc. Anyway, I'll tell you a funny one. I rang the Department of Environment last month regarding looking for a skip for our area. And I was told it'd be 2019 before we got a skip because they're broke. The areas are broken.
What?
2019, and the areas are broken into 8 sectors, and each sector has 6 sectors in, and we're last on the list of every sector. So it'll be 2019. Right? Now I've had children quicker.
Go around
2019 before we get a skip, right?
Go around to your neighbours with a fiver and collect a fiver off each of them and there'll be a skip there by tomorrow.
Well, PJ, I can tell you something now. There's an ordinance of responsibility on us as tenants of social housing, which we're very grateful for, I'd like to add. But we look after our property, we pay our rent, we maintain our property, etc., right? Now, there's an ordinance in City Hall as well. And if they don't have the funding, common sense would tell them they could kill 2 birds with 1 stone on Banner Night. And realistically, let's talk about it. I'm not on about washing machines or household rubbish. I'm on about wood. I'm on about things. And yes, I understand about the treated wood. I get that. But it's the previous caller said, like, I mean, technically, we all should be dead and buried, like, because the things that we got up to as kids, like, I mean, seriously, like, I mean, we would have been, like, seriously, you can't bubble wrap people. I mean, you have to go, God forbid, like, there are bigger cities than Cork City. And in Kerry, when the Sam comes in, we always have bonfires, but they're controlled. They're controlled bonfires.
And that's practically an annual event now.
Well, yeah, but like I am in support because I think it's brilliant to see, but if it's controlled, like anything, no messing at it. It's not, excuse my expression, it's not a piss up, like, but what? just have the kids and the neighbors. Like I saw it the first time I came up to Mayfield, all the neighbours were all talking. I mean, they were talking to one another. The kids were probably playing around the place. They're eating sweets. I thought it was really, really nice. Like, yeah. I mean, all right, granted, you're going to get some creatures that act the maggot. But that's where community comes together and says, hold on now a minute. This is the life of the children. Stop.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, yeah, adult supervision will sort an awful lot of that stuff out. Catherine, thanks. 1850-715-996. Lily in Churchfield wants to know where's PJ's bonfire. They all want to go there. I suppose I had that coming. Right, let's look at the list of where they're on. The actual organised ones, right, before we wrap this up. In Kilmore Park in Knocknaheeny, they're there between 5 and 8. Popham's Park, Farranree, between 4 and 7. Glenamoy in Mayfield, between 5 and 8. Lochmahon in Mahon, Lochmahon Park, between 5:30 and 8:30. And for those who are really daring and really fancy burning the midnight oil or the midnight bonfire, Clashdove Park in Toker has one between 5 and 9. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story about Clashdove. The very first time they organised the event there, myself and herself took the kids down to look at it for the crack. And it was brilliant. They organised bonfire in the middle of the park, properly built, and you know, there was no gunk on it, it was just proper timber. Then they had a couple of tents, one had a bit of a barbecue going on, there was a band of sorts going on, there was kids games, there was face painting, it was just a bit of crack, it was fun, it was a nice evening. And then about 40 yards away, they had the other bonfire, and it was blatantly built up 40 yards away from the organised one. This is a good few years ago now, let's maybe 9 or 10 years ago. Built away from the organised. There they were, boy, with the big bonfire and their slabs of cans. And they were so open with the slabs of cans that they actually sat on the mid-seats out of them. I'm not saying that I think it's okay to organise bonfires wherever you like and put them wherever you want. I'm just having to crack. But please, if we're going to have organised civic events, let's have at least a fire on it. Anyway, 1850-715-996. That lasted a lot longer than we were planning. Very last call. Tom, good morning to you.
How are you?
What do you think about this?
I'm all for the bonfires, yeah. In fairness. And the controlled situation is desirable, because I've seen bonfires where things went haywire and life was at risk.
Yes.
There's no call for that. None. But the reason I'm ringing you is that this was the school teacher breaking out, maybe. But the if you think of the names of the months in Irish, amongst the names, amongst the names, you have Beáltaine.
Yes.
Beáltaine was last month.
That's May.
And the tinner of Beáltaine, it was tinner, fire. And the Beáil was Baal. The ancient Celts worshipped, amongst their various gods, the god Baal. And the fire was to honour Baal. And there you are.
There's your tradition.
That's it.
Tom, thanks a million.
Okay.
See ya. 1850-715-996. Tom's call reminds me of something very important that's happening on Sunday. I'll tell you about it later. That's the annual Besbrook commemoration. I'll tell you about that later on. The text poll we closed did 80% say safe, organised bonfires, properly put together, let them go ahead. So nobody agrees with banning them entirely. 20%. 1850-715-996. Also, Mayfield Men's Shed will be involved in supervising a residence bonfire in Lotamore Estate tonight. It's only just started as an organisation, but delighted to help the community. Great organisation, the Men's Shed. Fabulous organisation. Really, really is. And started in Australia, out in the sticks, to stop men going demented. And now it's worldwide. But there's one in Mayfield now. And they're having a residence bonfire. They're supervising it tonight in Lotamore Estate. 1850-715-996. Reminder to our listeners, or those trying to listen, in West Cork, we have a transmitter issue on Nowen Hill in West Cork. Both our 96 FM and our C103 transmitters presently off the air. Our engineering team on their way, well, they should be there by now, to sort it. If you are down in that neck of the woods, as I said, this message is probably completely wasted upon you. But if you know anybody down there and they're trying to listen, download the app, the 96 FM app, on your smartphone, and you can listen live. 1850-715-996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Call the Opinion Line. This is what you came for. 1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
There's a story made the Irish Independent and a couple of other papers that we didn't even broadcast on the show yesterday. All we did was put it up on our Facebook page. And the power of social media these days is phenomenal. That it can create a story even without going on the air. This was a video that was sent in to us of young fellas, bunch of young fellas, down near the Kingsley Hotel there, down by the riverside. It happened earlier in the week. A bunch of lads, young lads, came along and they decided to do something kind of daft and something kind of stupid with an eel that they had caught in the river. This is what they did.
Here we go.
And they're going fucking deal into the pool.
And they flung the eel over the fence behind the Kingsley into the pool, which juts out the back of the Kingsley Hotel. And there were some people sitting inside the pool. And the boys thought this was a great laugh altogether. So they did. So we put the video where we pixelated it and cleaned it up so we can't identify their faces because they might be underage, which is why you can't do that. You can't just, by the way, fling a video up on Facebook, on our Facebook anyway, without the blocking out the faces for people who are criticising us for doing it. But anyway, and it went absolutely viral. Hundreds and hundreds of shares, thousands and thousands of views, and hundreds of comments. And the Irish Independent picked up upon it and they've run it because there's a huge... People are upset with what happened to the eel. Let's just play the bit of audio again.
Here we go.
And they're going fucking the eel into the pool.
Now, Katie, good morning.
Hi, PJ, how are you?
I'm sure I'm grand altogether. You were in the pool when the eel landed.
Well, I was walking towards the pool when it happened.
Right.
So I got into the pool, and because it was a hot day, I kind of sat on the steps of the pool.
Yeah.
And there was a girl with a guy just alongside me, and she happened to say out loud, I think if, like, something swam past me. And I was like, lots of leaves, you know, fall off the trees around into the pool. I said, sometimes it can kind of make you paranoid that there's something in the pool.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, I'm convinced there's something in here. And I'm
Katie,
like,
is it a big pool?
It's an outdoor hot tub, but it could easily fit 20 or 30 people.
Okay.
So it's big. It's big enough.
Yeah.
So I walked to the other end of the pool to check, and I just saw the eel at the bottom of the pool.
Right. Was it swimming or what?
No. See, after watching the video afterwards, it was thrown in at one end, but where I found it was on the other end. So it was obviously swimming around before I spotted it.
Yeah.
But I guess the heat and the chlorine and lack of oxygen, maybe he couldn't swim anymore, the poor thing.
Yeah.
So I said to the girl, you know, do you think I should pick it up? But I was kind of nervous, you know, I wasn't sure if I had teeth or, you know, again, after watching the video, you can see there was a hook in its mouth, like, so, you know, it would have probably been dangerous to pick him up. Yeah. And I do feel guilty now. I'm kind of beating myself up that I didn't pick him up to save him.
He was poor old Divil was probably bunched anyway at that stage.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people on social media saying, Asha, what's all the fuss about? 'Tis only an eel. But it bothered you because of what people picked it up and did to it?
Yeah, like, it really bothers me when people, even a couple of people had said it to my face, you know, it's just an eel. But, like, if it's something is living, something suffers, you know, and I can't watch whether it's an ant, an eel, or a person. I can't deal with something suffering.
Yeah.
And it really, really affects me. So
something I saw on social media, like, if it was a puppy or a kitten that someone had done that to, we'd all be outraged. But Ashrant is only an eel.
But what, like, that eel can't have been an eel, you know? Like, I view them as the same, you know?
Yes.
It's living, it suffers. If it was a puppy, yeah, it would be desperate. But it's desperate for the eel as well.
What about the others in the pool?
You know, like, these guys, you know, that put up the video on Facebook, they thought it was hilarious that there was a bunch of screaming girls. That wasn't the case. No one was screaming. You know, there was another guy in the pool and that couple, and everyone was calm, you know, no one screamed. So, you know, they didn't get what they wanted in that sense. You know, we were just disgusted more than anything, you know, that they could do something like that. So I got out of the pool to run and get one of the staff members, and she came back, and she was a young girl herself, like, you know, so she probably wouldn't have an idea what to do either.
Yeah.
So she went to get her manager, but the longer I was standing there and watching the eel, I was getting very stressed, so I just left the pool.
Was the poor devil, was he still wriggling?
A little bit, but he was dying.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see him moving anymore, so
Yeah, and of course, they're a protected species as well. So what the lads did was completely illegal, apart from stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you think they found that so funny?
I don't know. Like, I have a sense of humour, and I find lots of things hilarious, but not when it's something to do with a living thing, you know? That's not funny. Yeah. That's brainless, if you ask me.
Would you go into the pool again?
Oh, I was in there yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
The staff are just absolutely lovely. You know, I wouldn't be... I haven't even mentioned the name of the hotel for fear that would give them negative attention, you know.
I think pretty much everyone knows it anyway at this stage.
Yeah.
There's only one hotel down that neck of the woods, but...
Yeah. But I was in there yesterday and I was talking to the manager and they're very nice, you know, and I was in the hot tub by myself yesterday.
Good for you.
It was lovely.
And you remember, is it part of the club it is?
Yeah, I'm a member there. I go in after school sometimes just to chill out from the stress of children.
And why wouldn't you, girl? All right, Katie, listen, thanks for that. Take care.
Thank you. Bye now.
1850-715-996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Text the Opinion Line now. This is what you came for. 083-396-96-96. Cork's 96 FM.
Here we go.
And they're going fucking the deal into the pool.
Now, is it Mehdi is your name? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi. Have you got your name right there? I have.
Yeah, Mehdi. It's catchy, isn't it?
Okay. What were you thinking? I mean, do you think people are overreacting to this, Mehdi?
Not necessarily. I mean, like, if you look at it from a different point of view, like my main concern is, like, nobody got hurt. But I didn't know at the start that the eel was alive, and that's obviously extremely wrong. Like, there is no, it's wrong on every level, every possible level.
Mm.
But I think, when I could see the element of, you know, the funny part of it, I think it's, you know, it made me laugh. Is that wrong or right?
I suppose there's a bold teenager in all of us, Mehdi.
Yeah, it's true.
I laughed too, but I didn't actually like it at the same time.
Yeah, because there is kind of guilt, there is kind of guilty touch of that, of the laugh you get out of it. Because, you know, these ladies or men or whatever was in that pool, like, they obviously were enjoying their day and everything, and somebody just threw the eel. Obviously, it was wrong. But I can't help laughing at it, like, because just the idea, how did they even come up with the idea to get an eel and throw it up there? If we look when we were teenagers and young, like, you know, they're young people, they're actually act, you know, according to their age. It's just, you can't expect them to act like they are 50 or 40 or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we all did stupid things when we were that age, I guess.
I know, but the only thing, like, nobody got hurt, you know, given the fact all this stuff,
well,
horrible stuff.
An animal died, and probably died in a lot of anguish.
There's no dispute about that at all. It's wrong on every possible level, and should, for example, these fellas who did that should be punished?
Mm. Well, actually, it's illegal. To catch the eel and to anything other than put it back in the water is actually illegal because it's a protected species.
Yeah, I'm really an animal lover myself, and I really love all animals with no exception. I just, as I said, like, maybe throwing everybody's in that jacuzzi or pool, throwing their day, maybe not that. But it's kind of ruined it probably for an hour or two. Like, but you know, they're still young kids. Like, so
yeah.
I, you know, it's very, very hard to say, you know, what, you know, if what they did was what they did was wrong. But what level is it? That's really
you
question.
Can't you have to be human in a bit. You did laugh a little bit.
Yeah, I did laugh a little, to be honest, but. I definitely see it is wrong. It is wrong. Like, but look, it's done. And like there is really more stuff in the world to worry about rather than just that. I think they're young kids, and they're basically that's when we were kids.
Kids will be kids.
We did that. Like, but it's very hard to say. Like, if there are, you know, what they did. Like, obviously, it's not acceptable. You know, given the fact that we live in modern society, and you know, and these girls probably they were working hard and everything, and they get to enjoy their time in the pool, and somebody just threw a needle. If that was me there, obviously I never want that to happen to me. Like,
well, if I was in the pool, I tell you this much, Mary, and I said this to the lads this morning. If it had been me in that pool, I would have immediately thought, irrationally and stupidly, oh God, it's a snake.
Yeah,
and I'm terrified of snakes.
Oh, you'll never be terrified more than me. I used to wake up in the middle of the night. I dream a lot about snakes. Nightmares, like, yeah. I hate snakes.
So I would have thought if that blatter thing landed next to me, he's a snake in the pool. And I'd have lost the reason. I would have lost my life.
I wouldn't have overreacted. I would have got right, and I would immediately jump out of that pool.
I know, yeah.
But then I look at them and I go, they are young fellas, you know, like, fair enough, the eel, they harmed the eel and everything, but they didn't hurt, you know.
They didn't actually hurt any people, I guess you're right. Mary, thanks for that very much. 1850-715-996. I don't know what kind of a reaction there's been to it. Actually, just to read some of the comments on it, what an immature bunch of idiots, says Lisa. Show their faces and charge them with animal cruelty. This makes me so mad to see how little respect people have for animals. Well, I think it was explained, Lisa, why we can't show their faces, just in case one of them would be underage. There you go, we have a problem then. Aoife says, I hope the Kingsley are pursuing this. Animal cruelty, illegally killing an endangered species, is against regulations on their grounds. Not to mention the lowlife who thinks this is entertainment. Ever hear of a book or bettering yourself as a human being or generally not being a scourge on society? Fish away to your heart's content, but abide the law and have a bit of common decency. And here's a comment from John Joe, which I'm just going to read and let there. Okay, I'm just going to let this there because we have to move on to something else. We can come back to this after if you wish. John Joe says, ah, look, just another example of the interbred, unemployed, uneducated scum roaming our streets, getting a kick out of upsetting people who get up and go to work every day to fund their warped lifestyles. As I say, I'll just park that one there. 1850-715-996. It's nearly 3 years ago now, in fact, it possibly even more than 3 years ago now, that we first told you on the show about Japanese knotweed. There was an article in the Sunday Times a number of years ago that Deirdre brought in here, actually, called The Plant That Ate Britain. And it was about Japanese knotweed. And at the time, I had little or no idea what Japanese knotweed was. Now, not only do we know what it is everywhere. And it is eating parts of Cork alive. And there's some residents pictured on page 3 of the Examiner today, up around Rathmore Park, who have a serious problem with Japanese knotweed. I'll talk to them next. 1850-715-996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Call the Opinion Line. This is what you came for. 1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
As I say, page 3 of the Examiner today has local residents pictured at the back of their homes in Rathmore Park looking out at this sea, this wall of Japanese knotweed, which is clearly completely out of control. One of those pictured is Ali. Hi, Ali, how are you doing?
How are you doing, PJ?
Good. Now, I'm just looking at that picture, and I didn't actually realise, because I'd heard about this, I didn't actually realise just how bad that is. That's coming in over the wall at you.
It's coming in over the wall. The things were bowing down into it there last year in September, do you know?
And we were completely panicked the minute we saw it in June. We contacted the council and said, you know, you have to do something about this.
Because it's council land that's growing on, but it's encroaching into your houses.
It's in the property now, yeah.
Is it?
It's actually in the property. There's 7 plants inside the property, less than 10 foot from the foundations.
Well, how long is it there?
That's a good question now, because I'm only moved in there for the last year. But the neighbours tell me the problem's been there 3 or 4 years. That they've noticed.
Now, this is a thing that you have to be very careful how you cut it, you have to be very careful how you treat it.
Yeah.
But it's gone completely wild there.
Yeah, we had Japanese knotweed come up and survey it last year. You know, we did it between ourselves. And they said this is the most serious of all the problems in this area. So they reckon 900 square metres. So that was last year. So this year, probably 1,000.
Right.
So if you're driving down the North City Link Road, literally from the Blackpool Shopping Centre down, on the left-hand side up that hill, that's all knotweed.
Right.
But we can't get the attention of the council.
Yeah.
You know, we're in an emergency situation here, and places that are getting treated are like amenity areas. We're not an amenity.
Yeah.
We're residential.
Your fear, of course, is that it will start becoming uncontrolled and come into the foundations of your home.
Well, it grows 15 foot underground a year, is the estimate. So if I've planted 10 foot from my foundations, do the math.
Yeah. I want to bring in our gardener, Peter Dowdall, horticulturalist, who we've talked about this several times. Morning, Peter.
Good morning, PJ. How are you?
Good. We talked about Japanese knotweed 3 years ago, and you told me it is a huge problem and getting worse. I'm looking at a picture here now on the paper of people who literally, it is about to come in over their back wall, and as Ali says, it's already in.
We've talked about it, PJ, 3 years ago. We talked about it 2 years ago. We talked about it last year, and we're talking about it again this year. And nobody that has the power seems to be paying attention. And, you know, the situation at the moment with Ali and the situation where you're talking about is the council are letting themselves in very dodgy territory legally on this one. That's not to say that I want to blame Cork County or Cork City Council for all the problem and for not working on the problem. They can only do what they can do as regards money. I have been saying for the last 3 years, and I still say today, that what this problem needs nationally is a multi-agency approach. The Department of the Environment, the Department of Transport, the local authorities, the body in charge of the waterways, Éireann Road Éireann, all these people have, these are all stakeholders in this problem. They all need to come together, stop putting their heads in the sand, because this is going to start costing local authorities money. Because it is against the law to plant, to disperse, to allow the dispersal or cause the spread of Japanese knotweed. It's against the law. If you are aware, if you have been made aware that you have Japanese knotweed on your property and you do nothing to stop it spreading, well then, when it gets into the neighbouring property, they are well within their rights to go after you for money, to look for the repair of it. The local authorities, the length and breadth of this country, are leaving themselves wide open. And I mean wide open, PJ.
See, I think maybe half the problem with it, Peter, is that it's not... It doesn't sting you. It doesn't hurt you. It's not actually physically dangerous to people. Therefore, it kind of gets ignored.
It does. And, you know, people... I spend my life outdoors. I spend my life, as you know, in the garden, dealing with normally nicer situations than Japanese knotweed, but often always dealing with Japanese knotweed. But people in council offices and, you know, dare I say, in public service jobs, they just say that this is just a weed. Oh, this is only a storm in a teacup. This doesn't matter. It's only a weed. Well, you know, it's not only a weed when it's interfering with people's property. It's interfering with the ability of people to sell their property. It's interfering with people's ability to get mortgage, to get home insurance. It's not just, you know, a couple of crackpots giving out about a weed that's growing a bit too far. This is a serious... I first learned about it, PJ, when I trained over in England a lifetime ago, and I was in the early 90s, and I first learned about it over there, where it was a big problem for British Rail.
Yeah.
And it has cost the British taxpayers billions, and they're still not on top of it. And I mean billions. We're not that far behind. It's only really got a lot of media coverage over, as you were saying there earlier, over the last 5 or 6 years. But it's been a problem in Ireland for 20 years as well. And everybody is just putting their head in the sand in it.
The temptation, everybody. The temptation, and I know, Ali, you wouldn't be tempted to do this because you've seen how it grows. The temptation, Peter, is to get a strimmer.
Oh, God, yes, but don't. No, do not cut it.
I know somewhere where it happened, actually. It happened in Carrigaline, where a small patch of it started to encroach over a wall, and someone came out one morning with a strimmer, and now there's a whole road.
Oh, yeah. And this is how it spreads, PJ, because the plant itself is sterile. In other words, it's not like seeds that are blowing in the wind, which is how normally weeds and plants spread. It's sterile. So every Japanese knotweed that you see around the country has all come from the vegetatively, if you like, from the one original plant. In other words, cuttings and bits from one original plant. Now, that's not quite true because there are several different cultivars of Japanese knotweed and giant knotweed in Ireland at the moment. But it doesn't spread by seed. You know, if it did, can you imagine how bad it would be? So when people ask how it spreads, it's as simple as if it's encroaching on a road, on a public road, and a truck or a bus or a car drives past, some of it gets in its tires, on the doors, on the wing mirror, and we spread it. That's how it's spreading. It's that tiny little bit of it will grow.
Yeah. Ali, what have they said to you when you bring this to the attention of the council?
They're talking about having no funding, right? And being on a mapping exercise. Now, that was in 2016. And to the best of my knowledge, we still haven't been mapped because everybody in the area has a little, you know, a little poster stuck into the ground saying, don't cut Japanese knotweed.
Yeah.
We have none of those signs. So every time we get a hold of them, they just say, no, we have no money. There's no funding from, you know, the general allocation hasn't arrived. We have no money.
I suppose in a way, Peter, if the council has no money, the council has no money.
But there you go. I'm not here to stand up for or to beat down the council. I really am not.
Yes.
But if they have no money, they have no money. But something has to be done about it. I mean, there are companies, private companies, in particular the Japanese knotweed company, dealing with it. Now, of course, they're very, very busy. But the local authorities, I believe them. I believe them when they say they don't have the money. I'm not saying otherwise. And I'm not just, I don't want to be just, you know, getting up on the podium and having a go at the council or having a go at any of them. But this problem needs to be sorted. It needs to be addressed, and it needs every stakeholder that has, be it private volunteer groups, tidy towns groups, because they're the ones that are responsible for eradicating a lot, or controlling, should I say, a lot of it around the country. It's voluntary effort, but every stakeholder in this needs to get around the table here, and how do we deal with it?
There's a member of the City Council joins us now, Councillor Ted Tynan. Stay there, Peter and Ali. Thanks. Ted, good morning.
Morning, PJ.
I know you've raised this at council level. It is a serious problem. And for people like Ali and her friends and neighbours down there, it's ridiculous. Now, they can't see out. It used to be, correct me if I'm wrong, Ali, there should be a lovely view of Cork out of there.
You should be able to see Shandon.
Yeah. And all you can see is Japanese knotweed. Ted.
Well, PJ, that's frightening. Now, I would only have become aware of Japanese knotweed about maybe over the last 3, 4, 5 years, read it in newspaper reports and all that. And I think there was a councillor raised it in the city council maybe about 2 years ago about some place in Black Rock Village. And I've taken an interest in it since, but it appears to be more widespread than we realise. And listening to that woman that was on there, PJ, I mean, that's a frightening situation, you know. And listening to Peter, is it Dowdall?
Dowdall, yeah.
The gardener. I mean, he's like a breath of fresh air on the issue. He's so knowledgeable on it, and it's so widespread. And he pointed out the seriousness of it, you know. Now, I read recently then as well, in the UK, they have for a number of years now been spending a few million sterling every year and increasing the amount of money on an annual basis. But I read recently therein that there is a predator of the Japanese knotweed in Japan, and I think you pronounce it, it's spelled with P-H-Y, but it's
psyllid. Psyllid. Is that true, Peter? Is there a thing called a psyllid?
There is a psyllid. I wrote about it actually recently, or last year, for the Examiner, because it had trialled it in Cornwall. You're spot on, Ted, that there is, in Japan, there are natural predators for it, like there are natural predators for plants that would be endemic in Ireland that could take over in other parts. The psyllid isn't proving hugely successful in the UK. The fear about introducing something like that is, of course, it could vary its diet and become a problem in its own right. But that isn't proving to be the case. But it's not proving, unfortunately, to be very effective in the UK either.
Okay, so maybe.
Yeah, in what I read, and fair play to Peter, he knows the stuff there, that they appear to have imported some of this insect into the UK and have probably dropped it off in a certain number of locations where the knotweed is, and probably analyse it and to see how effective is it going to be. That would probably take maybe more than one season as well, probably.
That's right, by which time it'll probably be inside in Ali's kitchen. Okay. Listen, guys, I need to take a quick break and go to the news. I'll leave you there online. I'll put you back out to Brenda. But we can come back to this, because it is everywhere, lads. You'll see it now. Once you know what it looks like, you'll start seeing it everywhere. And if you have to wait any longer, it is going to be inside in their kitchen. That's ridiculous.
You're listening to a repeat of the 96FM Opinion Line. Phone and text lines are now closed. The Opinion Line, yeah, with PJ Coogan. Listen what you came for. 1850-715-996.
Just a quick word with Ali on the Japanese knotweed up in Rat. Can you do something for me, Ali? Just clarify, is it Ratmore Park or Ratmore Place? Caller wants
Ratmore
to know.
Ratmore Park.
Ratmore Park, okay, because apparently the caller was wondering which one it was. That's grand. You don't seem to have much by way of optimism here.
No, we don't. And I'll tell you, PJ, what we need is for the council to stop giving us PFOs. I have a whole folder full of PFOs from the council. We need a commitment from them to undertake work in September.
Mm.
This is our last chance.
Yeah. And you're saying it's actually in your properties now?
It's in the property now. And it's not a big property.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm looking, there's a photograph also on the paper of your neighbour. Is it Sam? And it's actually coming through the gravel.
That's correct. That's right. And the one next door is next.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, it'd be interesting to get a legal opinion on this.
Yeah, it may well be. Well, as Peter said, and I know he's a horticulturalist, not a lawyer, but he said it is against the law to not do something about it if it's on your property. And if that's council property, they're breaking the law by not doing something about it.
That's right. To plant or otherwise cause Japanese knotweed to grow. And by doing nothing, they're causing it to grow.
Okay. All right, then. Listen, I hope it gets sorted for you soon.
Thanks, PJ.
Cheers, Ali. 1850-715-996. Down to Mahon. Esther's been listening. Hi, Esther.
Hi, PJ.
You got it down there as well, have you?
Oh, this is our 8 year with this. It's at the moment, it's actually about 8 feet from my kitchen window.
Right.
And it's 17 foot high.
17 foot.
17
where,
foot
where
high.
Are you,
sorry?
Where are you in Mahon?
We are in Ballinor, in Avenue. We're just the back of the houses of the, you know, the side lane that you go down and you can see the, you know, the Masher Hospital?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
Yes.
If you're coming down that slip road, if you look over, you see the backs of our houses and the whole field. It's full of it.
Oh, jeez, I was out walking with the dogs a few weeks ago, myself and the missus, and there is loads of it down there.
Well, that field is after coming into the back of our houses.
Oh, for God's sake.
So there's myself, there's Stephanie, there's Shirley. We're just, can't open our bathroom windows, can't open our kitchen windows. And this year what we've got now, we've got 8 feet of nettles, which we never had before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Two people in our block of sick house that owns their own homes and is starting to go into their houses. Now, because 2 or 3 weeks ago there, the corporation raved to pay out €40,000 for a machine to go around Patrick Street and picking up gum. Now, that's fine. That's grand. If they have 40 grand to spare, that's fine. But the way I'm looking at it is, I don't own my home, but two of my neighbours own their homes. I'm paying my rent. I'm a tenant 29 years there. And yet they can't come out and sort it out for us.
Yeah, yeah. And as
I'm sick of it.
As Peter said, if it's on their property, if it's growing from their land, they're breaking the law by doing nothing about it.
Yeah, but to see how, if it's council's own fault, the house next door to us now, which is occupied now, but that house was vacant 8 years before it was given out. But when the last lady vacated the house, which was 10 years ago now, And the council got this guy with a lovely little small digger to come in the field and dig up and level off the backyard. And when Steph got her house, and it was all beautiful, lovely fencing gone up with a lovely earth in the grass.
But he was after uprooting all the knotweed.
Yes. So, like, see, what people don't understand, I know everything about knotweed because I'm living with it. Like, I mean, especially on this last week has really got me down with the heat and the flies, and the flies that I've never seen before. And then we have rats living in it. And I mean, who's that? So many people are going to say, God, there must be very dirty tenants. We are far from dirty tenants. This is not our problem. Our homes are spotless, clean on the inside. We have no control of what's going out of our backyards. And when I took out my tenancy 29 years ago, I took out a tenancy of a three-bedroom house with a back garden and a front garden. Now I'm down to a three-bedroom house with a front garden.
Is your back garden completely? Is your back garden completely taken over?
Oh, yeah, it's 8 feet from my windows, 8 feet from Steph's window. We can't even open our kitchen windows. We can't open our bathroom windows. So you can imagine the heat in our homes all last week with the sun that we had and all this week.
Hang on. So it's in the garden?
Oh, it's in our garden. That's what I'm trying to say to PJ.
I thought it was coming over the back wall.
No. If you come into my sitting room, into my kitchen, and you stand at my kitchen window, all you're looking at is 17 feet high of Japanese knotweed. And you're looking at 8 feet of nettles, something we never had before.
Good Lord.
Yes, this is what we're living with. Now, a year and a half ago, there was a gentleman by the name of John Butler, who is a Japanese knotweed in Cork. And the council sent him out to us. And he said it would take 4 seasons to treat it, which is 4 years, okay? Mm. And it can only be treated up to April and then September to April again, because after April it goes into bloom. Okay. Yeah.
Actually, John is on the other line there now. Yeah. Actually, they'll bring him in a second.
He knows me anyway. John was down with me and he saw the extent of it. But John is going to get an awful shock when he sees the extent for this year. But what's happening now is, and I only noticed it yesterday, is that the Japanese knotweed is actually at the top of our avenue, which is 6 houses away from me. It's coming out onto our main avenue out the front.
Oh, crikey, it's come through.
Yes. So, God, I don't know, like the last house, it must be just so evasive like that. It's just coming down. And it's actually over the top of our avenue on the front wall. So not alone is it in the fields, our backyards, it's now coming onto the avenue. And a lot of people from there up own their houses. What the corporation realises is, these people, if they want to sell their houses tomorrow, the people that want to buy the house can't get a loan. The people that are selling the house can't sell them because it wouldn't be worth a euro over this.
Yeah, because it gets into
the structure.
In Britain, it destroyed property value. Absolutely destroyed it. Yeah, I don't know if it's doing that here yet, but Peter Dowdall says if it isn't already, it soon will.
It is, of course it is, because it's getting into our drains. It's blocking our drains. It's so evasive. Like, I mean, it'll go up to the shush, up to our shoes and the rainfall, and you get the drips and you get damp, yeah. And get damp property because the water can't flow properly because it's growing.
Yeah,
and it grows 4 inches per day in the summer.
Per day?
A day. Oh. If I know a person that cut it, and the following day it came out, and it was 4 inches high.
See, there's the problem. You don't cut it.
Well, it's illegal to cut it, PJ. You can be fined if you're seen cutting it.
Yeah, yeah. Peter Dowdall is back there now, and I'm trying to go to Sun Valley Drive, but check that line five there for me, Brenda, because I think we have an outbreak of up there as well. Peter's back, and I'll get to John Butler also, who's serving it for the council. But Peter, this is like 17 foot of it now in her back garden, and it's 8 feet from the back door.
Yeah, and I suspect this is a bit of the confusion that I was referring to earlier. That sounds to me, obviously I haven't seen it, but that sounds to be giant knotweed as opposed to Japanese knotweed. No, that's really splitting hairs, PJ. It's the same problem, just it's a different species.
Yeah.
But yeah, is it as virulent? It is. And there is, unfortunately, like I was saying to you, it's sterile. It doesn't reproduce from seed, but there has been a recorded case now, I think in the Glanmire area, maybe more than one, of a super hybrid. So we have giant Japanese knotweed.
Oh, good Lord.
We're getting into problem territory here. All I would say is, I mean, just to repeat what I said earlier, that everybody, all the stakeholders need to get on board here to tackle this problem. The local authority, as I say, they're leaving themselves wide open here to claims against them. And me, not being a solicitor, I'm a gardener, but not being a solicitor, it would seem to me the case looks pretty cut and dry if you look at EU regulations.
I'll just bring John Butler in for a second, because he is surveying the various growth areas on behalf of the council. John, good morning.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
good. This seems to be, and so there's no blame to you, you're just doing your job, but this seems to be getting dangerously out of control in a lot of places.
It is, and we've surveyed numerous properties for the council, for the city council. So at the moment where we stand, we have price for treatment programs for the next number of seasons.
Yeah.
And so we're just waiting.
Well, someone's, hang on there, someone's dropped a line. Someone's dropped a line on me, which confuses everything. I'll take a quick break, we'll clean it up. Can I just ask, when we are in a conversation and we have two or three people in there, if you need to go, tell me and I'll let you go. Don't just pop the line down because it confuses everything. I'll come back to it in a sec. 1850 715 996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM. Wake up! Keep
on waking. Play Cork's Secret Sound with Nick Richards in the morning.
Yeah.
Identify the sound. Claim the cash.
You just won the money.
Oh my God!
Cork's Secret Sound.
Call me at 20 to 7, 20 to 8 and 20 to 9 for your chance to win.
With Cork Dental Care, Ireland's number one provider of 6-month smiles. Dr. Gronia will guide you all the way. CorkDentalCare.com.
Cork's 96 FM. Text the Opinion Line now.
This is what you came for.
083-396-96-96. Cork's 96 FM.
We sorted that out. Just by way of housekeeping, folks, when we have a conversation going on and there's three or four of you involved, it's always great to have that. It makes the show very busy. But if one of you needs to go, just say it and tell us that you need to go. We can let you go. Because if you hang up, it just means that everybody else can hear the boop, boop, boop on your line. Back to John Butler, who is surveying for the council. There's a massive job of work, even if the council had funds to sort it out, isn't there, John?
There is, PJ. I suppose we've surveyed properties now in Ferris Walk, Mahon, Toker, Blackpool. So we have a lot of properties actually priced for treatment at the moment.
Yeah.
Now, there are more coming in by the day. So I'm being updated, I suppose, regularly as to other properties that need to be viewed and surveyed.
What kind of money would we be talking about to get it done?
Well, we're not charging for calling out to surveying, but
yes.
For properties, it varies, unfortunately, because it depends on the level of infestation. And from talking to Esther, that seems to have the size of the infestation has doubled since I viewed it last year.
Yeah.
So it really does depend on the level of infestation. It could run from hundreds per year to thousands per year, depending on the size of the infestation. And I know from Esther's that there's actually, it's in next door with Stephanie, and I think it's Charlotte. As far as
she said there, she's back on. Esther, you're saying
hi,
no,
PJ. I'm sorry, there, my phone went off.
Sure,
my apologies.
Not at all. It's coming out now onto the street as well.
It is. Johnny was actually out with the server a year and a half ago, and he was just so sympathetic to us, you know, and he'd done everything in his power and he was going to treat it. But unfortunately, the time ran out for the council to get back onto John, and he remembers that. He was out with myself, Steph and Shirley, you know.
Mm. And yeah. Peter, there is a limited season for treating it, is there?
There is, PJ. No, I've just changed phone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, perfect, yeah.
Yeah, there is a limited season, and at the moment, as John is saying correctly, that the main treatment really is chemical, and it is a 3 or 4 year approach because it's not something that that will die overnight. To give you an idea of how strong this plant is, it's the first plant that will colonize a volcano after eruption. Okay?
Really?
So, yes, so it is a very strong plant, and even with the chemical control over 3 or 4 years, it may not eradicate it. There is, I believe, I'm not allowed to talk about it because it's before licensing authorities in England, but there is good news in the horizon in the treatment of it. As soon as I have anything to report on that, I'll certainly contact the programme, PJ, and let you know.
Do.
But at the moment, it's expensive. It's
what is it? Is it new technology or whatever?
I won't talk about it for now, if you don't mind.
Okay, okay.
It's an environmentally sound way of dealing with it, all right? Because the problem with the chemicals, of course, is number one, we're pouring hundreds of gallons of chemicals into the environment, and number two, the main chemical, glyphosate, which is Roundup and Garlon and these things, is very likely to be taken off the market across the EU in the next 12 months. So there are further problems. And the thing that I would really like to stress to people, and I know you've said it a number of times already in this piece, not to cut it and not to go near it, but be very careful of your own liabilities here. If it's on your property, do not let somebody remove the soil. Do not let somebody in there with a mini digger. Do not let people remove it from your property, because you are then liable for that, because at the moment you're not allowed to transport it from your property. So be very, very careful.
Oh, so there's because a lot of legal constraints on everybody here.
PJ.
All right, okay.
And ignorance, as you know, of the law is not going to be a defence. No, no.
Okay, Peter, I'll let you go. John, you too. And thanks, Esther, as well. I want to go to Sun Valley Drive. Thanks, guys, where we also have another infestation. Barbara?
How are you, PJ?
How are you doing? Where is it growing?
Well, I live in the end of Fair Hill, but at the back of my house, I've a gable wall, and from the end, halfway up Valley Drive, it's grown mad.
Right. And is it near the houses?
Oh, it is. Well, it's very near my house, because the corporation only put a new roof on my extension in the back,
yeah.
And it's actually grown again.
Right. And don't, whatever you do, don't try and cut it.
I know that we're warned that, like, not to cut it. I see my house has already been rebuilt all on the inside.
Yeah.
And now the snapweed is growing back in now again.
And how close to the house is it?
Right next to my back wall.
Oh, crikey. Okay. Yeah.
Now, I'm only after getting my keys back, so I'm over now a couple of months, so I can go back in now within the next week or two.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. But you're hoping this won't encroach into the house or
but
into the eaves?
It's going through the wall, PJ.
It's going through the... Oh, God.
The back wall, the gable wall, like, you know, the wall going around your back.
Oh, you mean the perimeter?
That.
Yeah. It's not coming into the house yet, no?
No, not yet. Hopefully it won't.
Hopefully not. You watch
it. The corporation were here today, 3 years ago. And I think it got worse, whatever stuff they put down.
All right. Okay, Barbara, thanks for that. 1850-715-996. It's all over the place. It is all over the place. And the council seem to be overrun with the task. But whatever you do, says Peter Dowdall, do not cut it. Do not attempt to strim it. Do not attempt to dig it out, and don't try and transport it off your property, because if you do, you then are responsible for propagating it, and you are breaking the law. 1850 715 996. Now, we've had a text, and I'm going to read it for what it's worth and let it with you. This has come in, we have a number, we have a name at the end of it, we're trying to call the texter, so far to no avail, but I'm going to read it anyway. Hi PJ, I was in the Colquay area of the city yesterday with my son near Dawn Square. As we walked towards Liberty Street, I couldn't help but notice the number of Muslims and blacks in the tiny area of the city. They seemed to have taken over the old historic buildings and streets of the area. As we passed, they were shouting and roaring aggressively across from one building to the other at each other. And that is signed from Dennis. He describes the area around Dawn Square, Liberty Street. Sure, we know it well. Know the area very, very well. I can't say I've come across the kind of things he describes, but he describes it nonetheless. Leave it there for what it's worth. 1850 715 996. Now, back to this. Play this one more time.
Here we go.
And they're going fucking the deal into the pool.
Now, we spoke to Katie, who was using the pool at the time, and she said that she was upset by the fact that a living creature was chucked over a wall or over a fence into the pool and died in front of her. And she was afraid, poor devil, she was afraid to lift it out of the pool for fear it would bite her. And you know what? It's a natural fear. It is a natural fear. Jonathan, good morning.
How's it going, PJ? Well,
good, good, good. You saw the video.
I did, yeah. I saw the original video with your man's face, and the earlier fella you had on there saying there was young kids. They were definitely not. The man was definitely late 20s, early 30s, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. The reason that we, just for legal explanation, the reason we pixelated that. It is just in case anybody would be underage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
But, you know, you got to think, right, if this is what they're doing on camera, just to get a few likes on Facebook and just, as they say, for the crack, if that's what they're doing camera. What are they doing off camera? What are they doing at home, you know? And this is definitely what taxpayers' money is going towards. Scumbags on the dole just acting the gobshite around the place.
Others would say, Jonathan, sure, listen, it's a bit of crack. It's only an owl eel. Oh, and they're only acting the fool.
Yeah.
What would you say to that?
I suppose it is, you know, you can say that, like, but as I'm saying, if they're doing that, what else are they doing? But I just want to pick up on the fact there as well, like, I go down that area often enough with my dogs and stuff, and the area down there is actually, is just infested by scumbags like that when the weather is out.
Really?
And the place is destroyed with rubbish.
It's a gorgeous place for a walk.
Oh yeah, but it's destroyed with rubbish and there'll be all scumbags like that out there. If you go out the leaf fields a small bit there, there's actually kind of a bus shelter place there and there's a bit of a pool area where people go swimming. I was out swimming there myself last Sunday.
Right.
And there was just two scumbags casually walking past, just threw their empty beer bottles into the river, you know?
Crikey.
But I often see guards there cycling around Fitzgerald's Park. I just think it would be fairly beneficial for them if they just take a quick cycle out there on a fine day, you know? Just make their presence shown because the place is destroyed, like. I go out there often and I'm just waiting to find needles there, to be honest with you.
Oh,
there's beer cans, everything and anything out there, like.
Yeah, we are a dirty old race, aren't we, when the weather is good? I mean, they made sugar at the beaches last weekend and you're telling me this about it now down by the leaf fields. We're a dirty, filthy old race too, when we think about it.
Oh, disgraceful, like. Well, we're not a dirty race, it's just, I suppose the majority of, I don't know whether you'd say majority or minority, but there's a big part of us are a dirty, rotten crowd, all right.
Yeah. All right, Jonathan, thanks for that. 1850-715-996. Rita had a thought about the eel. It landed in the pool and probably died of chlorine burning its gills, and it probably died in a lot of agony. So it did, the poor old dill. Rita, good morning.
Good morning. I was just going to say there to you that if you know, they were aiming at the pool, right? They obviously threw it in midair.
They actually threw it twice because it bounced back off a wall the first time.
All right.
And landed on the floor again, and they picked it up and threw it. Yeah.
Well, anyway, if it had missed the target they were aiming at and it hit one of the people in the pool in the head or so on, you know, or somebody even passing by, with flying through the air, what an impact that would have had if it hit someone, you know? And I was just wondering, would people be laughing so much then?
Yeah.
You know, could have happened, you know? I mean, it's an eel now. What will it be next?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, people were thinking, thanks, Rita, people were thinking, you know, like, it's an eel. Get over yourself. That was a lot of the talk on social media. Tis an eel. Get over yourself. An owl fish, like. Well, as I'll find out in a minute, it's a protected fish, a legally protected eel creature. But what if it was a puppy? Or what if it was a kitten that some idiot had flung over the wall into the pool? What will we say then? 1850-715-996. Andrew Kelly's with the ISPCA. I'll talk to him next.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
Call the Opinion Line. This is what you came for. 1850-715-996. Cork's 96 FM.
Now, Andrew Kelly is the Chief Executive of the ISPCA. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Now, talk to me about the eel, first of all, regardless of this particular incident that went on. The eel is protected species, correct?
Well, it's also an endangered species and is protected. First of all, its welfare is covered by the Animal Health and Welfare Act, which is a new piece of legislation that came into force in 2014. And some people might not be aware that fish would be covered by that legislation in the same way that dogs, cats and other animals are covered. The eel is also covered by wildlife legislation and also by fisheries legislation. Mm. So, for example, under the Inland Fisheries Act of 2010, there is a bylaw, the conservation of eel fishing, which essentially makes it an offence to take, kill or be in possession of an eel. So there are potential offences have been committed here from an animal welfare perspective and also from a wildlife and fisheries perspective.
If you do catch an eel when you're out fishing, and a lot of people would fish in the river at this time of the year, and there are quite a few eels in there, what are you supposed to do with it?
Well, my understanding is you should be returning it. I'm not an expert on angling or fisheries issues, but people should make sure that they're aware of the regulations and what their fishing license covers and comply with that. Okay. But just going back to this particular issue...
Yes, I'm assuming you've seen the video.
I have seen the video, and it quite clearly shows a potential offence in terms of the Animal Health and Welfare Act. First of all, throwing the eel, I think it bounces back off a wall or a fence in the first issue.
It does.
And then it lands in a hot tub, from what I believe. And I should point out that there was a report done in 1980 called the Medway Report by Lord Medway in England that showed quite categorically that the scientific evidence supports the hypothesis that fish feel pain and have the same pain receptors that other animals have. And we know that taking a fish out of water, in fact, we use the phrase like a fish out of water in everyday life. Mm. We know that taking a fish out of water will cause distress to the fish, and handling a fish will damage its mucous membrane and its scales in some cases and cause pain. So, the welfare of fish should be taken into account. Now, of course, legal angling and legal fishing at sea is exempted from these things. Mm. But in this case, the actions of this particular individual would not be exempted. So there are potential offences here. But I think more importantly here, and of course, if people do come across this kind of thing, it should be reported to the guards. And much as social media is a great platform for us all, and we all follow it and use it in different ways, but posting something like this or sharing it on Facebook, rather than taking it to the guards, means it's very difficult in the future to secure a prosecution once it's all over social media. So if people do come across this kind of thing on social media, they should report it to the guards or the ISPCA, or in this case, the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
Okay. All right, Andrew. Thank you for that. That's
Andrew. Can I just say one more thing? What yes, it also indeed. Represents is a lack of respect for animals and a lack of empathy for animals. And if people were prepared to do this to fish, are they prepared to do it to other animals? And indeed, we know that there is a link between abusing animals in some cases and going on to be to abuse or to be violent towards humans. So it's not just an all fish, as many people have said. It's representative of a wider problem in Ireland. And as Mahatma Gandhi said, the greatness of a nation can be judged by the way its animals are treated. And sadly, in many areas of animal welfare in Ireland, we are falling far behind other countries, and there's a lack of respect for animals, and that needs to change.
Yeah. Just to distinguish with regard to the sharing of it, Andrew, it was originally shared by either the gang itself or their friends. Yeah. We're not able to show which.
No, I'm aware of that. It was sent to us
and we used it. Then we didn't promote it. We showed it to people through our Facebook page.
I'm aware of that, PJ. But really, instead of, I don't mean to be critical here, but instead of sending it to you, perhaps people should have sent it to the guards.
Yeah,
okay. To be investigated like any other crime.
Yeah, by the time it got to us, actually, it had over 30,000 views, so it was semi-viral by the time we got it.
No, I understand that. So, but we are looking into it, and we will discuss it with the guards, and if there are, if we are able to initiate a prosecution in this case, then we will do.
All right, Andrew, thank you very much. Andrew Kelly from the ISPCA is the Chief Executive. 1850-715-996. And that's for those people who think 'tis only an owl eel. It's a protected species. It would have been distressed alone by being out of the water. And imagine, okay, it was a, it's a water-breathing creature. It's a creature that breathes through gills. So imagine you take it out of water, it cannot breathe, hold your nose or hold your breath or stick your head in a bucket of water and see how you like it. That's exactly what you're doing to that fish when you take it out of the water. And then to make matters worse, you chuck it against a fence and it bounces back and lands on the ground. Then you pick it up again. It's still distressed, still can't breathe properly. And then you fling it into chemically treated water. It senses water. It goes to breathe. The water burns it because it's hot and poisons it because it's full of chemicals. That's what you're doing. So, next time, as only an owl eel. And Deirdre wanted to take that point up as well. Bit of crack, bit of banter, says they all said, Deirdre.
Yeah, you see, I just couldn't disagree with a single word that your previous caller and you said there now, PJ. You know, it's just the lack of empathy and compassion for another living thing is just astounding. How, you know, I mean, what thought process, what could they say to themselves inside in their own heads that would make it okay to do something like that? It's beyond me, because it's the if it's okay to do it to an eel, sure, what's the next thing? Look, we'll throw a bag of kittens into a river and we'll see how long they last. What's the next thing? If we don't get a kick out of that, what's the next thing? And what's the next thing? And what's the next thing? It seems to be that there's no cut off point for banter.
Yeah.
You know, what's banter? Banter to me is having a laugh with somebody that doesn't insult you or hurt you or hurt anybody else.
Somebody else was saying on the Facebook that, you know, the very people are cribbing about the cruelty to the fish, and I am, it's a desperate cruelty thing to a living creature, are the very same people who sit down tonight and grill a fish for their tea.
Yeah. You see, these fish are caught commercially. They're legally, the people that are catching these fish, it's a legal operation. They have a license to do so.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the same thing about people who eat meat. You know, they've they're doing so in the full notion that they're doing this. They're not doing it for a bit of crack. They're doing it because they like to eat fish, and it's caught legally under license. That's the big difference. Yeah. I was a lady angler. I mean, in my bygone days, and a junior angler. Right, and we had a tag and release program. That's what the anglers do nowadays. We catch the fish and we release the fish.
Yeah.
You know, and we mark our fish in the day that I was out. We mark our fish on our card and we get the points for catching that fish. And you release the fish back. Yeah.
Here's a text in, for example, now, Deirdre, that says people should get a life. They have super trawlers fishing off our coast, cleaning out our fish. Nothing been done about it. That's an issue in itself, but I don't think that person gets it.
I think people are missing the point completely. They're missing the point completely. Here you had a gang of kids, PJ, who deliberately went and took an innocent animal out of its habitat, right? And viciously flung it against the fence. And when that didn't work, then flung it, as you said, into a heated pool. I mean, where's the empathy? Where's the compassion?
And here's the thing. The people who are saying it's only an owl eel, I imagine, what would they say if it was a puppy?
Well, this is it. They'd be ranting and they'd be raving and they'd be all naming and shaming and they'd be vigilantism would be, oh my God, this is disgraceful. But I mean, just because of eel, I mean, come on, it's not the most attractive looking animal.
No, they're horrible
on the face
things.
Awful looking things. I remember going swimming along, go out past the lee bats, and you'd be afraid your life to put your foot in the water because they'd be coming along to you.
You feel well against
that
your leg.
I mean, awful looking yokes all together. That doesn't mean I want to hurt them.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean I want any pain to come to them or that I want to disturb their habitat.
Exactly.
Because what will happen if we do all this? what will happen if we erase all these animals that we don't like or that offend our senses at Ashutani and O'Leal? So there's many more in the river. There aren't. That's the problem. There aren't many more. And if we keep, you know, doing what we're doing, what will happen, you know, in 1,000 years' time when we're no longer here? Will all these animals be no longer here either?
Like for a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the porpoise. The porpoise that was picked up on the beach in Tregumna and brought up to those flats or those apartments.
Exactly.
Up there. And people were saying, Asher, it's only an old bit of crack.
Asher, he was dead.
He was dead. Yeah.
But it's the thought process that I'm coming from, PJ. It's the lack of empathy and compassion that leads me to think, oh my God, how would these kids react in another situation if they have no empathy or compassion for the smallest of living things?
Exactly. All right, Deirdre, thank you. I'll leave you at that. 1850 715 996. On the subject of animals, Margaret wants me to say thank you to Edward O'Flaherty. Edward runs the Ideal Pet Shop on the North Main Street. I know the place well. And to his daughter, Jennifer, they rescued a duck that was trapped along with its 9 ducklings. Ah, doesn't say where they were trapped, but he's released them now into the lock. Good man, Edward. Good man. Also, someone else on WhatsApp to 083-396-9696 said, I walk down by the leaf fields every day. Your last caller is totally right. It's a disgrace and can be very intimidating. That was Jonathan's comments about the state of the leaf fields at the moment, which is unfortunate to hear. 1850-715-996.
The Opinion Line with the Ireland edition of The Times. Be well informed on Ireland and the world. Cork's 96 FM.
The award-winning radio star is moving. Breakfast radio presenter KC.
96 FM are delighted to welcome KC.
Cork's 96 FM will have a brand new breakfast show.
The wait is almost over. Show featuring Ross Brown. Kicks off Monday, July 3rd at 6 a.m.
It's gonna be epic
on Cork's 96 FM. Text the Opinion Line now.
This is what you came for.
083-396-9696. Cork's 96 FM.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Pete.
Now, I think I'm just, this is just a, by the way, call. You are concerned, I think, about the amount of talk to do with social housing.
That's correct, yeah.
Can you get a bit closer to your phone there for me, if you would.
Yeah, okay, that's correct. I certainly have, yeah. You see, the housing problem is twofold, PJ. Unfortunately for some people, that they may have lost their jobs and they can't afford to pay their mortgages and who are crucified by the banks and they're in big trouble. It's vital and is well discussed for the government. It's vital to help these people out, okay?
Yeah.
Very, very important. They're just a tragedy over the years. Now, the big problem you see with social housing, and certainly it's a focus area, and they're doing their maximum to help people. Now, we all afford a car that is within our means. Very few of us have a boat, a yacht, or a private plane, or a helicopter.
Yes.
Not everybody can afford them, that's the reality. But we have people who have unfortunately never worked, 2 and 3 generations, as is well documented, and some of these have a lot, we say, 6, 8, and 10 children.
Yes.
We have non-nationals and foreigners arriving in the country, and there's 6 and 8 children in all these families. They're all depending on social welfare. Then we've got the itinerants, the settled community, or the travelling community, as we say, were benefiting enormously from social welfare benefits.
Yeah.
And that when all these guys grow up, they're all depending on the state to provide social housing for them.
Yes.
Now, we all must live according to our means. What is affordable? But that is the big secret. That is the big word that people must face reality for. Because you cannot be expecting the, you know, the government, they're going to crucify you, they're going to crucify me, who are working to pay all these benefits.
But regardless of people's backgrounds, Michael, you have to admit, they need places to live.
Correct, we agree there, yeah. But the thing is, if people have 20, if every family had 20 in the children, 20 children in the family, oh, then in a God Almighty could we very well house them.
So what are you suggesting? That people...
Well, people have to face reality, and as I said to you, we can. If we've had boats and yachts and helicopters and planes, right? The same regards to children. You have family according to your means. And, like, you take a lot of single girls, different all over the place, all over the country. They might have 3, 4, 5, and 6 different children from 3 or 4 different fellows. And that is well documented.
There's not too many. Surely there are too many of them, Michael.
Might you check it out? I'd say that's proven out to be a brilliant exercise for you. Get on to the Department of Social Welfare. And ask, obviously, they will not disclose names. But you take a test case regards to different situations and families in that predicament. And they'll tell you, okay, they're getting X for housing, X for free medical, X for free hospital, etc., etc. And who's paying for it? Those who are working. But the whole thing comes down to the fact that they're children. They just breathe continuously.
Even if people have children that they cannot afford.
Correct, yeah.
You know, and there's a point to be made about that. But then those children... They didn't ask for that circumstance, and we must mind them.
I agree with you, but that's the point I'm making, that people, I know how you're going to do it, all you can do is give people advice, but people must face up to the reality that in situations like they described to you, that you can only afford so much. You're working, I'm working, we can only afford to have so many families. We cannot afford to have 10, 12, and 20 children. And the bottom line is, down the line, if I'm not working and I haven't got disposable income, I can't afford to go on a holiday, I can't afford to educate, I can't afford to feed and clothes. You know, expecting the state to screw the people who are working, drain the tax load of people who are working, and help those who, you know, who are depending so much on
it. What you're suggesting, Michael, is don't have children if you can't afford.
No, I don't know what you're going to afford. I know it backfired in China, where there was one child per family, which is a daft idea first day, but then it was wrong. But the way we're going at the moment, in fairness, I know every child irrespective, but being a national asset to the country, wants to do the very, very best. But when you cannot afford it, when you cannot afford it, people must realise that 6, 8, and 10, and 12, and 20 children, they'll all need houses down the line, won't they? Who's going to afford it? Who's going to pay it?
Michael, listen, there's something we might come back to after the weekend, but you raised some strong points, and I know there are points that won't go down well with some people. But listen, every voice or every opinion gets a view or gets an opening on this show. Sheila, good morning.
Good morning, PJ. How are you?
Good. Quickly, you contacted us about something you saw up on Blarney Street. You sent us a picture of a lady with a walking frame trying to get around two bins. What's the story there?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I am at the cleaning of the streets, you know, at the Rock Community Centre. I'm the vice chairperson. Well, I've been at it now for months and months to get those bins moved. They will not put them out their backs. There's backs there for the bins, but the path is too narrow. And I mean, there was a girl there yesterday with her buggy and having to come out on the road, you know what I mean? Everybody has to.
And this is one particular house.
Yeah, number 77, I actually said it to him, can you please ask them to put the bins out their back? Can you please, before somebody gets killed? Because a few months ago, there was a girl and a girl with a buggy and her two little children, and they nearly got killed with a car because they had to come out on the road.
And have you knocked on the door and asked them to move them?
I did. I actually saw the landlord last there the other day, I saw him, and I said, could you please possibly ask them to put the bins in the back? Because there's going to be it's an accident waiting to happen.
And what response did you get, Sheila?
He said, I'll do it later. I said, they're there now. Can you not just go in and tell them to put them out the back? I said, there's no room for the people to go on the path. And the same with the house across the road, on the opposite side as well. And the bins are spoiled, stinking, manky dirty. And they're there months, and they will not put the bins out the back. They just won't, but there's no room for anyone with walking sticks, with the walkers, or anyone in a wheelchair. And especially, there's a few blind people live along with the white sticks, you know. And they
Picture you sent us of the lady with the walking frame trying to get around them. That's distressing.
Yeah, something has to be done.
All right. Okay. All right, Sheila. Listen, thanks for bringing that to our attention. 77 Blarney Street. If they're your bins, for goodness sake, put them out the back, will you? put them at the back. They're blocking the path. You can see it from the photographs. People can't get around them with a buggy or a walking frame. That's that one. Last call today. There's an event coming up on Sunday. It started out a couple of years ago as a small little gathering. Now it's become an annual event, and an annual event that is very important to the people involved, and in fact that people come literally are from across the world to be part of. Martin Parfrey is one of the organisers of the Besborough commemoration on Sunday. Hi, Martin.
Morning, PJ. How are you?
Great altogether. This is the fourth now, is it?
It would be, and it's always well supported. It's an absolutely beautiful ceremony, and it is purely a dignified, respectful remembrance of the many mothers and babies who are buried there. As you say, people come from all over the world. We've got people coming from the States and UK, from all over Ireland. We have Mary Steed from Philadelphia, Susan Lone from the Adoption Rights Alliance, two lifelong campaigners. We also have Patricia Carey, the CEO of the Adoption Authority of Ireland, and delighted to have her with us this year. Now, as I say, it's a very respectful, dignified ceremony. Mm. We have beautiful music. Carol O'Sullivan, the internationally renowned singer, was going to do the honours, but sadly she's come down with laryngitis. I'd like to wish Cara a speedy recovery.
Indeed.
But with all the talent in Cork, we overcame it. Her friend Magella Cullough is stepping in, another outstanding singer. And we'll also have Oliver Kane, who's a great singer and musician. So, you know, we're blessed with the talent in Cork, really.
Yeah, and it's down in the garden, down at the back of Besborough. It's a very, very beautiful event, and I'm delighted to be coming back to MC it yet again on Sunday.
Yep. No, we're also very lucky to have you. You've been a brilliant MC for the last couple of years, and we're looking forward to having you again. You always do a fantastic job. There is something very important that I'd like to say. There are areas in Besborough where the privacy of people has to be respected. So I would ask anybody who's attending to follow the advice of the stewards to come straight down to the Angel's Plot, where the ceremony takes place, and afterwards to leave directly, unless they're coming into the canteen kitchen area for tea, coffee, biscuits. I have to say, I have to thank Tom Quigley, the CEO of the Besborough Centre, and Sister Eileen for all their assistance and for their hospitality.
Okay.
But again, the rest of the buildings are strictly out of bounds to respect people's privacy, and that is very, very important.
2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, Besborough Angels Plot, and it's all usually done and dusted by about 4, isn't it?
Or earlier. We don't like to keep people there too long. We are fortunate this year in that the weather forecast is looking good. Up to about 5 or 6 o'clock, but we'll be long gone by then.
Very good. All right, Martin.
So it should be a great event.
Hopefully it will be. I'm out of time, but 2 o'clock Sunday down at Besborough, we'll see you there for that. It's a beautiful event. It really is. And I'm looking forward to being part of it yet again. And that's it for the week. It's been a busy one. The programme edited by Brenda Dennehy, produced and researched by Fergal Barry. Thanks also to Richard. Your podcast, remember, it's always a bit later on a Friday. Repeat in the early hours Monday. And I'll talk to you Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you just after 9 on Monday morning.